for Sarah to be able to take a minute.
You're something.
Now we're working.
Hey, okay.
Right. Let us flip the right switch.
He knew what switch to push, I guess.
Stuart, let Tommy know that we don't need the device. Thank you.
Very, very good. Very good. Well, again, welcome to our meeting, ladies and gentlemen. And as we go through that meeting, as I mentioned, if you want to talk, speak on a certain issue, you can do so. And we'll have, at this time, we'll have council prayer. And then pledge of allegiance to our flag.
Well, because we have speakers, that means no new taxes for a new building. For those of you who choose, please bow your heads in prayer. Our Father in heaven, as believers, we bow our heads in thanks to you for the many daily blessings you provide to us in spite of all of our sins. You have once again spared our lives to enter these chambers, not because we are anyone or anything special, but you've allowed us to convene to continue to be your servants. And for this, dear Father, we say thank you for your grace and your mercy. God, you have repeatedly told us that if we ask for anything or make any requests according to your will, you will listen to us for what we ask. And Father, today we ask for wisdom and understanding and solutions to some of the concerns our city is faced with. We don't need to name them one by one because you already know what our needs are. We also pray for local, state, and national leaders of all across the country. Teach us, dear Father, how to work together in harmony for the best interests for all. We pray for patience as we work with people who may not be kind towards us. Grant us the fruits of love by doing good and kind deeds through giving encouragement and listening to one another. Teach us, dear Father, self-control at times when our attitude and behavior is tested, and mine is tested sometimes in many ways, and help us to live peacefully and godly lives and lead by example. And dear Father, we promise to work and do those things that are pleasing in your sight. This we ask in your name. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions necessary this evening to our agenda? Okay, we'll move on. Item one is first is minutes. Consideration of the minutes for the committee meetings of June 27th, July 7th, July 9th, July 30th, and the regular meeting of July 14th, 2014. Do we have a motion to, and a second to approve the minutes?
I so move.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. Passes unanimously. And the presentations this evening, we have one. Presentation of Government Finance Officers Accounting Excellence Award for 2013. Mr. Leduc, please.
For over 20 years, the City of Aiken has been blessed by the fact that we've had great support staff and directors of our financing and have produced a document called the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, or referred to as a CAFRA. Tonight, we have a presentation by Kim Abney and Bretta Smith, who's going to go ahead and come forward tonight with that presentation.
I would just like to introduce Ms. Bretta Smith. She met a couple of you before. She is with the South Carolina Public Employees Benefit Association, or the retirement system, but now they go by PIBA. And she is the incoming president for the South Carolina Government Finance Officers Association. And I appreciate her being here tonight to present the award.
Thank you.
I'm actually here on behalf of our president, Dennis Locke, and GFOA, our national office, to present this Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting for the City of Aiken's 2012-2013 Annual Report. I've had several conversations with Kim, and in speaking with her, I learned that this is the city's 22nd consecutive award. That's quite an accomplishment. Some of you may be familiar with this program that's offered by GFOA, but for those who are not, I just wanted to briefly read the reason this program exists. The GFOA established the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting program, it's commonly referred to as the CAFRA program, in 1945 to encourage and assist state and local governments to go beyond the minimum requirements of generally accepted accounting principles, which is referred to as GAAP, to prepare comprehensive annual financial reports that evidence the spirit of transparency and full disclosure, and then to recognize the individual governments that succeed in achieving that goal. Reports submitted to the CAFRA program are reviewed by selected members of the GFOA professional staff and the GFOA Special Review Committee, which comprises individuals with expertise in public sector financial reporting and includes financial statement preparers, independent auditors, academics, and finance professionals. And if you like, you can find out more about that program on the GFOA website. I would like to emphasize that regardless of the number of prior awards, 22, each annual report is evaluated independently. Therefore, that means that each year, the same amount of hard work, due diligence, has to be repeated to gain this national recognition. You should be extremely proud of your finance department in achieving this goal. So I would like to present this award, this Certificate of Achievement of Excellence in Financial Reporting, to the Honorable Mayor Fred Cavanaugh.
Kim, we thank you and your staff so much also for making this possible that Bretta could be here.
Have you run out of wall space yet?
To you.
Actually, last year, if you recall, they gave us a marble plaque, and this year they sent me a disc to go on.
Oh, okay. Otherwise, we'd have to buy a new building.
Well, here you get something bigger. Right there. Thank you so much. Thank you, Bretta, for being with us. Business. Item one is approval of appointments and discussion of appointees to various city boards, commissions, and committees. Mr. LaDuca.
We have one appointment tonight, and that's by Councilmember Mary concerning Israel Haynes to the Housing Authority to replace Sarah Woods. So for your consideration, this would be this appointment only.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a motion and a second?
Move of approval.
Okay. All right, we have a second. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. How about nominations for our next council meeting?
I have one, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
I'd like to nominate Larry Morris to the General Aviation Commission. And just for the record, thank Steve Peterson for his yeoman's work, bearing, staying as long as he did on the Airport Commission.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been there a long time, certainly. Okay.
I have two. Okay. I'd like to renominate Ann Dix to the Community Development Committee, and I'd like to renominate Don Barnes to the General Aviation Commission.
Okay, very good. Any others? Okay. Those will be on the agenda for our next meeting. Item two, second reading and a public hearing of an ordinance to amend the fiscal year 2013-14 budget regarding winter storm tax expenses. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by its title. It's an ordinance amending the budget of the City of Aiken for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2013, ending June 30th, 2014. As the mayor stated, this is for the winter storm we just recently had. There was a lot of overtime there spent by several divisions and some of the accounts in public service. City Council did approve this at the last meeting on first reading, and this is the second reading to amend the fiscal year 2013-14 budget for winter storm PACs and the related expenses.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second for approval?
Someone,
I'm sorry. Who was first?
Okay. Reggie, I think Kate.
Okay.
I second the motion.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. Thank you. Item three is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the fiscal year 2014-15 budget to allow for improvements at the Railroad Depot and Whitney Pullover. Do we have a motion and second for approval?
I move approval, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Can I read the ordinance by title?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to read the ordinance by title, so it's officially in the records. This is an ordinance amending the budget of the City of Aiken for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2014 and ending June 30th, 2015. By approving this tonight, we'll be adding $26,000 in the budget to construct a deck at the Railroad Depot. The deck would be under the current roof that is placed there. It goes from the railroad cars to the depot itself and will be used in the future for any outdoor events that would be taking place at this location. The deck would be built, hopefully, and completed by the end of this calendar year. The other change is to add $40,000 in this year's budget to support the pavilion at Whitney Polo Field, and this be the first of three payments for that for a total of $120,000. Council did approve this at the last meeting on first reading. This is the second reading of the ordinance to amend fiscal year budget 2014-15 to allow expenditures of local accommodation tax funds for the improvement at the Railroad Depot and for Whitney Pole Field. And we do have sufficient funds and reserves to do both of these projects.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
Can we redo the motion?
Okay,
I move approval.
Second.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. My error. Item four, second reading and public hearing on the ordinance for the sale of Lot 14 in Ventures Industrial Park from Coca-Cola to Dr. Queen Harvey. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance authorizing the City of Aiken to waive its right of first refusal in the property owned by Piedmont Coca-Cola Bottling Partnership and located in Ventures Industrial Park. In 2000, the City of Aiken sold this property to Coca-Cola. They had hoped to put a regional office and distribution center at this location. However, their plans have changed, and they would now like to sell the rights of the lot to Dr. Queen Harvey, who would be building a conference center of approximately 10,000 square feet to be used for meetings, conferences, weddings, and other events. Attached is Coca-Cola's asking the right to waiver this right of first refusal and to approve the sale to Dr. Harvey. Council did approve this at the first reading, and this is the approval of a waiver of right of first refusal for Coca-Cola to sell Lot 14 in Ventures Park to Dr. Queen Harvey for a conference and meeting center.
Okay, thank you, sir. Then we have a motion and a second.
I so move. Second, Smith.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under new business, the first item is the first reading of an ordinance to amend the concept plan for property located at Stratford and Whiskey Road. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, I'm going to read this by its title, and then I'll get into a little bit of discussion. An ordinance amending the concept plan for property located at the intersection of Whiskey Road and Stratford Drive. The Planning Commission unanimously approved this with the following conditions. So I'm going to read these conditions, and then I'm going to discuss a couple of these in particular. That the conditions of approval on the rezoning to PC and concept plan approved in 2003 are replaced by a condition stated below. There could be a condition that the building appears substantially as shown on the elevation, but that the planning director be allowed to approve changes deemed appropriate. That the property owner execute and record a cross-access easement agreement to allow shared parking. That only one monument sign be allowed as shown on the elevation, except that the planning director be allowed to approve any minor changes. That buffers along the street frontage be undisturbed. That the development of the subject property comply with the LDR study as each phase is completed, unless the planning director waives requirement because it's impractical. That was a study done in, I believe it was 2000 or 2001, that characterized any improvements along Whiskey Road would have sidewalks and other improvements, so that eventually as property is developed, there would be a continuation of the design factors that we'd like to have in there. But item number seven, that there be a driveway connection to Stratford Drive at the driveway on Whiskey Road frontage allow all turning movements. Eight, that there be an undisturbed buffer of at least 25 feet adjacent to the western property line, and that additional evergreen plantings be required to form an effective screen in order to minimize the impact of springstone villas. And nine, that conditions of approval be recorded at the RMC office within 120 days. I'd like to go ahead and just clarify a couple of conditions for council, because you may want to discuss this further, and basically to make sure we're all on the same understanding. Condition five would apply only to Stratford and Sizemore. In other words, the buffer that's along Whiskey Road is proposed to be 50 feet deep, but only about 35 feet of that is already cleared because of the power line easement. So when we start thinking about an easement there, even though it's 50 feet, most of it's cleared because of that power line. So the zoning ordinance will require the significant and grand trees to remain to stay. The developer wants to be able to remove undergrowth so the development is more visible, which we felt, or they felt, was reasonable. If council wants to not require that the buffer along Whiskey be undisturbed, then condition in number five in the commission recommendation will have to be reworded. So if you'd like to see a change in that, if you're saying that you don't want that undergrowth to be removed, then please state that in the motion that you'd be making under the approval of this particular ordinance. The second one, which is probably even more critical to discuss, is that item number seven. Item number seven states again that there be a driveway connection to Stratford Drive and that the driveway on the Whiskey Road frontage allow for all turning movements. Now, the Whiskey Road turning movements, we have looked at it, and the driveway would be located far enough away from the intersection that there should not be a problem with the traffic signalized intersection of Stratford, Powder House, and Whiskey Road. So in other words, it's far enough to the south that there shouldn't be a problem to put a left turn, right turn moving in. The major thing that we wanted to make sure that council understands, if you decide to keep this condition, it should be clear whether the driveway has to be built when the assisted living project is built or whether the driveway can wait for the development on the northern track. But right now, they're recommending that a driveway be placed to the assisted living. You could say, yes, we agree with that, no, we don't agree with it, or yes, we agree, but it could wait till the other property is developed. And that would be the property that's closer to Whiskey Road itself. So for council consideration, this is first reading of an ordinance to amend the concept plan for 11.8 acres for property located Whiskey Road and Stratford Drive.
Okay, thanks, sir. Okay, do we have a motion?
Mr. Mayor, with all of the, I had a number of emails, and I think other people did, from the citizens, and I move that we suspend the rules and have a discussion based on also that the Planning Commission, when they revised the motion, there was no discussion after the motion was revised. And I think we need to allow everybody in the public meeting to do that. So that's my motion, to suspend the rules.
Do we have a second?
A second.
Okay. Show of hands.
Just
to spin the rules.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
I think, first of all, that we need to, that the neighbors be sure and understand the buffers and the stuff that Mr. Ledoux talked about.
Right.
And I think we did a very similar thing with the hotel area, or the whole business area, I should say, business park type thing, and the same thing here. And so I think that would open up discussion, see if there's any on that from anybody.
Okay. I don't have a hard time retaining the buffer. What's the developer asking for?
The developer is asking that the buffer be allowed to be cleared so that the property would become more visible. So the undergrowth would be taken out. The grand trees, the significant trees, would still remain.
Would that, if you did what the developer wanted, would that make the project visible from the street?
They feel it would.
It would.
And they're here tonight, so I don't want to speak for them, but you could certainly ask them that.
Yeah, let's hear from them. The developer on that, if you would.
Please come to the podium.
I can't see a thing in the building. Nobody can see.
You got to see the sign and the buildings. We did that for the hotel.
Hi, my name is Justin Newman. I'm a senior development coordinator with the developer, Smith Packet Medcom. Also with me, I have Wynn Bishop. Wynn Bishop is Senior Vice President of Development and Construction for Smith Packet. In addition, we also have our civil engineer here, Dan Rickabaugh, with Moore & Associates for any sort of more technical related issues.
Okay, thank you for being here.
We appreciate being here. Would you like me to speak maybe a little bit about our company and how we came to here, or would you like me to start by just addressing the issue at hand or the question at hand?
Well, I think just addressing the questions that
sure,
we have.
Sure, sure. Like we said, prominence of the building and the way it's more than being seen from the roadway is of a good concern to us. What clearing underbrush and undergrowth allows us to do is have our site more prominent and look more cleaned up, and keep in mind we do come in with full irrigation and landscaping to dress up the building. So what clearing the underbrush would allow us to do is have our building be more prominent, clean up the streetscape, but also keep in mind, as Mr. Ledoux, I think, explained, that this is underbrush. These are small shrubbery bushes. Perhaps they're already dying bushes or dead bushes or trees that have fallen down. So what we're not doing is we're not proposing to remove any dense vegetation or any grand trees or fully grown trees. What we would simply do is just clean up things like weeds and underbrush that give our building a better perception and also cleans up the streetscape a little bit.
Now, will you have flowers in there and that kind of thing? It'll be...
Yes, as part of our site plan, we will have a planning and landscape schedule. Right. Which we will do, and they'll have planning. And again, the front and back and sides will also be irrigated to help grow grass.
Right. Plus keeping the trees.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely.
Any discussion with the Planning Commission on this issue?
Not to my knowledge.
I don't think there was.
No.
Because I'm wondering why it's there. If I'm wondering why the condition is in our memo.
When I talked to the planning department, they just wanted to have clarity so that if, like in the other cases, the undergrowth was removed, that council would be aware of it, that there would be no question about what would happen in the future. So if citizens called or anybody else or council calls, why is that being removed? Everybody is aware about it.
It does seem like it would be a lot neater.
I'm not sure I'd want to put something up if nobody could see it. And it looks like that's what this condition
is. That's basically what it is. But again, we just want to have clarity and transparency concerning that.
And I think the key is a very similar, almost identical thing done with the hotels. The visibility to a business is obviously key to their success.
That's correct.
But this is regarding buffers on two sides or three sides?
The two sides.
Sizemore and Stratford.
I'm not too sure about Sizemore, but
where do y'all want to clear these?
It would be Whiskey Road in front of the facility. Okay. Again, there would likely be some landscaping that happened on the Sizemore side or direction of the building as well. But to my knowledge, I don't think we're proposing to change that landscape or any of that shrubbery. But we would certainly, Sizemore Road would also be a side of our building that we would want to landscape and clean up, so to speak, for lack of a better term.
Okay. Well, we certainly need to make it clear what would be done over there on Sizemore as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, just not, is it in writing what you would do? Is it down pat? Like everything else is when you go to construct the building and landscaping.
My name is Dan Rickerbaum with Moore & Associates Engineering, and I'm the senior civil engineer on the project. I was here at the Planning Commission meeting with Mr. Sachs, who's not here tonight, with Smith Packett, and this issue was a concern because it mentioned undisturbed buffer, and typically what we want to see is a cleaner project, and so he brought it up as a change that they allow to be nice landscaping, and of course we're going to have our surveyor do a tree survey to identify the larger DBH trees to preserve, but other than that they're going to meet the landscape ordinance and requirements by the city, you know, the engineering department, the planning department. So we'll provide all the landscape calculations to make sure all those are addressed. And you have a nice-looking project on Sizemore, Sizemore and Whiskey Road. The ones that we front on this project, we'll show that in the site plan.
Okay, very good, very good. What was the other?
The other one is item 7. The Planning Commission amended at the meeting. The original submission did not have an entrance onto Stratford Drive. And if I misstate something, please let me know. And at the end of the meeting, when the commission went to vote on it, there was an amendment to add a driveway connection to Stratford Drive. There were a number of citizens there, but there was no discussion at that time. And in the meantime, I got a number of emails and even a couple of conversations. Hey, we didn't put one for the hotel. We don't want one here. And I think we need to give both parties, the developer as well as the citizens, a chance to speak about it.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
And I would think you might go ahead and mention what your original submission was, and I think it's the last page in here, and then what was changed on the what is in this package.
If I'm speaking correctly, the original submission showed an access roadway above the Phase 2 parcel or north of the Phase 2 parcel onto Stratford Drive. After deliberation with planning and reworking the site plan, that was pulled off. That access was not shown to Stratford Drive, leaving only the access to Whiskey Road as well as onto Sizemore. Planning Commission, due to circulation through the property, the safety of traffic flow coming in and out, and due to the fact that Stratford Road is the only lighted intersection, thought it would be prudent to allow that access onto Stratford Road. I can speak personally for us as a developer and for our operations team. The most important aspect to us is the safe access in and out of the site. And in order to have delivery trucks properly moving through and emergency vehicles, if need to be, to come from all sides, what we really would ask for and would like to see is a full movement of access onto Whiskey Road. Certainly, we have a very less impactful project proposed than a hotel or the previous commercial development. The average age of our resident is 87 years old. Most do not drive. I believe based on the VDOT ITE traffic manual, we produce less than 300 trips per day, including staff and residents, which is extremely low. So I will say that Planning Commission recommended that access be on Stratford Road due to safe movement in and out of the site. And we agree that full movement onto and from Whiskey Road is important. So that's kind of what we decided.
Mr. Mayor, both of these, the proposed as well as the approved concept plan, one is on page 143 and one's on page 52, if you do want to, I think it'd be good to show those on here. It's this one, Sarah. This one. Mr. Mayor, this is the one that was proposed at the meeting. Mm-hmm. It shows, and they did ask for full
in and out access off of Whiskey. I think that means left in and right out and all the things that you would have.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And then it's easier to see on the page 152 when if you page 152 is a little easier to see.
All right, now if you show the 152, please, sir.
There you go. That's not the right one?
No.
That's the prior plan. Okay.
Let
me go back.
Yes, I think you had it right.
Okay.
Previously.
Hard to distinguish.
Okay. You want to go back to 143? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I'll go back to 143. There you go.
Okay. Yes, sir.
You know, after their discussion, I think we need to open it up to the citizens to hear their comments.
Certainly. Sure. Yeah, we'd like to have your comments. Anyone in the audience would like to speak on this issue? Certainly. Just come on up here, if you would, please, and just tell us your names, if you would.
I'm Zelda Duran, 204 Cathy Court. Homeowner at Springstone Villas. And as you already stated, the Planning Commission did make an amendment to item 7, and we did not have the opportunity to speak to it. I appreciate the time now. And actually, that's why I am here, because I love the concept plan. I'm looking forward to seeing a new neighbor that has a very attractive facility, and my only objection is the cut through to Stratford Drive. Now, from what I remember last month, there were only two things that were cited why this was important and necessary. One was that the gentleman from the real estate company said the property, the northern parcel of the property, was unsellable without access to the traffic light. The other one, which is far more important, and it's the one that I'm sure you're almost interested in, is the safety factor. Now, as far as unsellable, it's proposed, or it was last month, that the facility on the northern parcel would be a medical facility. Aiken has a lot of medical facilities. On Silver Bluff alone, there are at least four. There's a new one that's been built on Doherty. These roads are busy roads. None of these facilities do have traffic lights accessible to them. Let's say it's not a medical facility. Let's say it's some other business. We're all familiar with Whiskey Road. Whiskey Road has dozens and dozens of thriving businesses that do not have access to traffic lights. Therefore, I don't think that this is even a good argument that it's not a sellable item. Mr. Waters thinks it's a sellable item. It's his property. He's the one that directed Mr. Sachs to remove the cut onto Stratford Drive. So, just to move on, because I don't think that there's a precedent right here for a traffic light accessibility, but to move on to something that I want to discuss in more detail, that's safety. Safety is uppermost in everyone's mind. It's really the most important thing to do with any new project coming in on Whiskey Road. Now, according to the Aiken Department of Safety, the five most dangerous intersections here in Aiken are Whiskey and Eastgate, Whiskey and Doherty, Whiskey and Pine Log, Richland and on Lawrence, and Richland University. Guess what? They all have traffic lights. So providing people access to a traffic light is not going to prevent accidents. What is going to prevent accidents is people using the change direction lane, and I'm not going to call it what our or real estate agent called it. It is known officially as a changing direction lane. It's used on busy roads, not just in Aiken, but all over this nation. In Aiken, it's so important that the Department of Safety does not keep a record of any accidents in the change direction lane. I'm not going to say that I don't want that if you give somebody a traffic light from the five dangerous intersections that you're going to throw them into an accident. That's not so. But giving them a traffic light is not going to improve their safety. It's their driving habits that are going to improve safety. If people are going north, up on Whiskey, at 50 miles an hour, that's not the speed limit. Yes, you're going to have an accident, and no traffic light is going to prevent that accident. Basically, that's what I wanted to address before you, and with your permission, I would just, because it was already mentioned this evening, I would just like to readdress the fact that the hotel asked for that access onto Stratford Drive. This council decided that it wasn't necessary. They denied access to them. I don't know what makes this northern piece of property so special that it requires people who use it to have access to a traffic light. But I understand the statement that perhaps it's going to be up to the developer to put it in, or maybe if you decide, you can put it off until the next parcel is sold. But if you grant it to parcel on the northern end, in my mind, the hotel, which is now under construction, is going to do a turnaround. They're going to come back, they're going to appeal, and they're going to say, if they can have access on it, we are renewing our request for access to it. If you give access to the hotel and this facility, and I don't think you should give it to one without giving it to the other, but if you give it to both of them, can you guarantee us that Stratford Drive is going to be as safe tomorrow as it is today? And that's just, I really appreciate the time that you've given me, and I don't think you have any questions, but if you do, I'll be glad to stay up here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to speak? Okay.
My name is Kathy Zippler. I live at 129 Sessions Drive in Stratford Hall. I propose to the cut onto Stratford because we don't know yet what kind of business is going to be developed on that corner. We were basically told by the zoning, the building commission, it could be a restaurant, it could be basically anything. So I think the decision is premature. It wasn't part of the original assisted living facility plan. They're on the corner of Sizemore and Whiskey, not the corner of Whiskey and Stratford. And I'm just concerned if it's decided ahead of time, what kind of business are we going to get? It might be a medical office, but it might be a restaurant. They said that themselves, that they don't know what it's going to be. So I think it's premature. I think it's too soon to make that decision until we know what's actually going to be there. And I.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'm Dee Hicks. I'm Vice President of the Springstone Homeowners Association, and as been stated before, we've fought with everybody on the hotel having access to it. The original plan that was presented here, we all liked. had no access onto Stratford. It looked good to us. Now it's come back that it should have access onto Stratford. If there has to be some form of an emergency exit, why not put up a gated exit that can go out onto Khaki Court as it was originally planned in the original proposal? Khaki Court was originally, when the first development was started, was supposed to go up into that property. So you could put some kind of emergency exit there and bring it down on the Khaki and then out on the Lynn, and you already have the roads there.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Pete.
I've got a question, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
I don't see an access to Stratford on that schematic.
No,
am I missing something?
It's not drawn there. And that's what I wanted to address real quickly. The reason that they're talking about it, about this parcel to the north, is that the planning department required the developer to go ahead and draw a plan for the parcel to the north. That's even though they're not at the present time developing the parcel to the north, the planning department made them do it, a hypothetical development. And in doing so, the planning department told them they wanted the access way to Stratford. The planning department told them not to put it on there. So that's why you have a drawing for a parcel that's really not up for development, but also that doesn't show that access, that curb cut onto Stratford Drive. Saying it's premature is because our planning department told them to do this.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Meg, clarify if I'm wrong.
But, the original drawings, not this page, but 152, shows the connector between Khaki and that first structure on the south side. And that's not on here either. Is that just totally out of the picture now?
There's a building there, I think, now. I couldn't speak for sure, but I think there's a building where that connector is.
No, there's not.
Okay. I don't know that part.
I assume that was, on the original plan, I assume that was a connector between Khaki and the
yes.
Bolton, right?
Yes. That's an old concept plan one. Yeah. When in 2003 it was first developed, I think.
And that still has a connector on the Stratford.
Mm-hmm. No, you have another person that would like to make some comments.
Oh, okay. Sure.
You clarified.
Make sure you introduce yourself.
My name is Peter Stein, and I am a resident at 100 Sessions Drive in Stratford Hall. And I'm a member of the board for the Stratford Hall Homeowners Association. One of the clarifications I think you brought up, I don't have the drawing in front of me, but the entrance from Springstone Villas was incorrectly drawn to show it coming out into Stratford. That particular one is correct. But I also see where the access road into Stratford Hall on the projected project is showing it coming into Stratford Hall on that particular one. That's the first time I've seen this.
That's
part.
That's from 2003. This is the one today. Is that correct there or not? You can go back to 143.
No, this is correct now.
See, and this one's not showing the access on the Stratford right
now. Okay. But that's correct.
Okay. That's the one that is on this agenda.
Now, with regard to the access into Stratford Hall, at some point in time, if you look at that drawing, the three lanes of Stratford Hall are almost a boulevard. It's even wider than, if you go across the Powder House, it's even wider than it. The current time with regarding safety, I know nothing in volume of traffic where somebody can't get through the light today with just one light. Rush hour, commute times, and what have you, rarely is there any buildup of cars to exceed five or six. There's two lanes. To talk about safety, whatever went into the north end of the property, if it was a restaurant, it would have to suggest that at the time of day a restaurant is open, it'd be all piling in and out at the same time to be a concern for safety of getting in and out of the light. By and large, most people would probably choose to take the entrance into Whiskey Road, the in and out. I see no problem with the volume. Sooner or later, something is going to go into that road. With regarding the homework the lady did on if one does it, then we have to offer it to the other. If you look at how that property has been built up recently, it's a high, they filled in an awful lot. To come in a back way of the hotel today into Stratford Hall wouldn't be buying them a whole lot of anything. So my take is they were content with those two properties that are intended on the north side of Stratford. Those two properties are going to be going in and out of the same connection. And then you got the northern property is where the church and the fountain is. But I haven't spoken to other than a handful of people from Stratford Hall. And I don't disagree with my neighbors regarding the concern of what's going in there and what have you. We'll face that issue when the time is right. And we have just as much of an argument factor as we do today. But it is not a safety issue that I perceive in the foreseeable future that's going to be a problem moving in and out of that traffic light. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Anyone else?
Yeah.
Come on up. Yes.
Good.
I'm Calvin Zipler at 129 Sessions Drive. We went over this with the motel, and you knew there'd be a lot of traffic coming and going at particular times. If this ends up being a shopping center or a medical facility, there'll be traffic coming in and going out. And we've got one entrance to go in and go out on Stratford Drive. Sizemore is a loop. They don't show it on there, but if you take Sizemore, you can go around and come out closer to the next intersection up going towards New Ellington. With the Stratford Drive, if there's an accident there, we're stuck. If there's an accident on our road, we're stuck. You can't get out because it's be a block. And if you come up the Whiskey Road, like John said earlier, if you've got four cars, you can get through. But you're the last one going through because people coming from Powder House, instead of turning in the first lane, which the law requires, 90% of them go off to the second lane. You cannot turn left until everybody clears off of Powder House before you can make a left turn from our road without concern of someone running into you. Because all on the phone, they're all making wide turns. So if the other buildings are going out below here, they'll actually get into what the lady would call a lane change, and then they'll move over left or right, and it won't interfere with people coming in that Stratford Hall. But if someone comes out, barreling out of that new development, whatever it is, hopping on the phone and has a wreck in our intersection right there, we've got no way out. Nobody has a way in. So I ask that you go with the original plans, which I do not have an interest in exit on the Stratford Drive, and let them have it turned two ways there from the center section of the property. I mean, a motel can do it, and these people can do it just as well. It looked like, and it's a good project if you do that. You have no problem with it.
Okay.
Any questions?
Okay. No questions. Thank you, sir. Anyone else?
Mr. Mayor, members of the panel, my name is Mo Garcia. I live in 403 Ascot Drive in Springstone. I'm on the board, and I was the ex-president. And we fought, like many of the residents here today, representing the three communities, Stratford, Springstone, and Springstone Villas, totaling about 225 homes. We fought long and hard to get the hotel to acquiesce to our requests, to the point where, as you all know, the project was rejected initially until they made modifications to avoid access to Stratford Drive. Pardon me. The point is that even with due diligence and taking being mindful of the traffic access through Stratford, it is our only corridor in and out of three communities, 225 residents. We still have issues today with the existing construction. This is not the venue to raise those issues, but I think it should be pointed out that it is our only access. Road construction still goes on. I have pictures that I could gladly share with you showing today's status of that road, debris on the road, construction equipment on the road, in spite of reminders at the time that it would not happen. We still have issues with landscaping, which we won't get into, but I think just to support what my fellow residents have eloquently presented to you tonight, we didn't approve it for you didn't approve it for the hotel. I think it makes absolutely no sense to approve it for this project. The project on their merits are great projects, and we don't object to that, but just to reiterate, it's our only corridor in and out. If you block it in any way, shape, or form, it's a potential problem for 225 residents of this city. And that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Yes.
My name is Clarence Beeler. I live in Stratford Hall. I'm very familiar with the area after 9 years living there. I prefer that we have no through traffic. I like the idea that we have one exit and one out. I don't know if the council is aware that the first 130 or 20 feet of Stratford Drive is three lanes wide. A bit more than three lanes wide. So if you figure we're exiting, we're actually exiting two lanes. If they say now that we only have one way in and one way out, if they put the access road off of Stratford Drive back through the two projects, that would give us two more accesses onto Whiskey if for some reason all three lanes of Stratford Drive were closed off, and I can't imagine that happening. It'd have to be a turbo wreck back there to close three lanes.
Thank you, sir. Okay, anyone else? Yes, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen. My name is Jim Jewett. I live at 251 Khaki Kirk. And I notice on that plot up there, there's about 100 or more parking spaces proposed. And I think that's really going to create a congestion at the Stratford Drive and Whiskey Road intersection. Thank you. Oh, and okay, that's it.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
This is to the developers. Comments have been made by the citizens in the Stratford Drive area that they welcome your development. They believe you will be good neighbors. What has got them, has them concerned is the plan to place that ingress and egress on Stratford. And I'm trying to decide what is most important in terms of convenience. It is convenient to have that ingress or egress off of Stratford, or to be perceived as good neighbors with that development going there. And I would think that you'd say it's important to be good neighbors, and how important is that when you weigh that versus wanting what is convenient? That's my question to you. Yes.
You bring up a good point. We definitely want to be good neighbors. We want what's best. We want the best safety for our residents, our employees, and the surrounding community. I think of utmost concern to us for operations and safety is the full ability to have full turning movement onto Whiskey Road. that would include the center road that we would share as a shared access. But it is important to us. We hear the concerns of the community, and we certainly want to be a welcome neighbor, and we want to promote safety among all. And I think with trucks that could be coming in and out, as well as any emergency vehicles, I think it's important to be able to do left turn onto Whiskey Road and left turn in. I think that's of more importance to us than the Stratford Road ingress and egress.
I got a question. Apparently, it's the Planning Commission that told you to make a cut to Stratford. Now, if you're bound by the law and you're a civil engineer, there's no legal reason to have access to Stratford. I mean, you have designed your concept plan, and it satisfied all the ingress, access, fire trucks, emergency vehicle conditions. Then why? I'm a little bit confused, to be honest with you. I can't understand. I mean, now are you changing your minds that you agree with the Planning Commission, or are you just saying so the Planning Commission will, go along with it?
Can I make one point? Sure. Now, my name is Wynn Bishop. I'm Senior Vice President with Smith Packett. Just to clarify two items, the 2003 concept plan did have the access onto Stratford Road. That was well before our time. The plan that we show does not actually show access to Stratford Road. We're in favor of it based on the fact that the Planning Commission recommended it. It's not our initial plan to do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
I will stay.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, anyone else in the audience? If not, it's back to City Council now.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve the application on first reading as presented.
Okay, do we have a second?
And that is without the...
I'm sorry. As recommended by Planning Commission. That's what's been presented to us, with the recommendations from Planning Commission.
And
that's
that is to have
the access to the
on Stratford?
Mm-hmm. You're saying... Yes, to the...
I'm saying that I make a motion for approval of the plan as recommended by the Planning Commission on first reading.
Okay.
As presented by the Planning Commission to us.
As I understand, that includes a cut.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I understood what you're saying. Okay. We have a motion. Do we have a second motion? A second to that motion. Okay, I guess it dies because of lack of a second.
Can we have a motion?
Yeah, can I make a comment?
No, wait
a
minute. Yes, go ahead.
The 2003 concept plan that's been approved by the city has a curb cut there, if that's what we're seeing on page 152. So what we're doing then, if we don't approve it that way, is we're taking it away from them. So we're willing to sit here and take away from a property owner and a potential developer, we're going to take that away. Just clarity's sake, I'm asking that question. We're going to take it away without asking their, without caring about what they think.
Let's get this straight. Maybe I'm confused. The property owner, I thought the property owner did not want this cut.
Not at all. The property owner does want the cut.
Well,
unless I'm wrong, does the property owner want that curb cut on Stratford? And is that curb cut approved on the current concept plan? Okay, there's one there. There's a concept plan on record that this council approved. So if we... The reason it's not shown on this presentation okay. is because these developers did this presentation, not the property owner. And so Planning Commission, or not Planning Commission, but Planning Department made these guys draw a hypothetical development on the northern boundary. Well, it's a hypothetical thing. These guys didn't care as much about that curb cut on Stratford Drive, Planning Department told them not to put it there. So they're drawing a hypothetical, and they're told not to put it there, so they didn't. So if we don't grant it as Planning Commission asked for it, then we are taking it away from the property owner. Well, I don't even think he spoke. So, I mean, do we want to sit there and take it away from him? I mean, if you do it at first, reading.
I don't have a heartburn, as you rephrase it, taking it away, which is not really an issue here. It's whether or not it gets put in with this particular development. But I understand where you're coming from.
Well, he'll have to ask for it back because this changes the concept.
That's right.
Plan
what we take away, we can put back in. But there's a level of uncertainty with what's going in there. Now, if we came in here and we were going to put a lot of very active businesses in there, that would be one thing. If there's a lot of what I would call inactive businesses, such as the project going in, that's another issue. We don't know what's going in. So the residents have come to us and said, listen, we want to keep our road integral. And
I think there's a lot of homework to be done. Don't you think at least at first reading that we should pass it as recommended by Planning Commission and do that homework? Because if there is a very active business mm-hmm. that goes there and you only have one access and it's going to be on Whiskey Road, we don't know yet if DOT is going to approve that location on Whiskey Road. And if they do and a very active business wants to go in there with a lot of cars, that may not be enough.
I'm not aware that DOT has to approve this particular project.
They have to approve the curb cut.
Yes.
State highway.
So do you want to put the whole
300 feet from the intersection. They turned down the one 300 feet from the intersection on the other side of the intersection. They turned it down.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
The council recommended a curb cut on the hotel side, 300 feet from the light.
Yes.
DOT would not approve that. DOT said the closest you can do it is 600 feet from the light. So this was about 300 feet from the line.
And it never came back to council for us to fight for the developer? The first I've heard of it.
Right. It didn't.
I can't speak to that, but...
But it's pretty important. I mean,
this group told them they had to have that access road before the light, okay? And it was going to be 300 feet, the way I understand it. I'm not the expert on this. I'm just simply trying to make sure we've got a big picture view on it. But it was 300 feet ahead. Now, DOT went and approved it and said, here's where you can do it 600 feet ahead. All right? Planning Department looked at that and said, yeah, that satisfies the requirement to have access road. I mean, this body didn't say 300 feet. They just said here. The Planning Department allowed them to end up complying with DOT's requirement of 600 feet and put it where it is.
But why would we think they're going to allow the cut here? Then why didn't planning...
Telling you they might not allow it here.
But why are we running a developer through this whole process if we don't even know if they can build it? If they don't get a cut out on Whiskey Road, they're not going to build it.
Well, I think they'll get a cut. It's just a matter of 300 feet. Well, if it can't be that close, then it won't be accessed in the northern property. It'll only access the southern property.
How many feet are there on the property from Stratford going in my direction,
well,
going south?
Clearly you have questions. I don't have all the answers. I'm simply suggesting at first reading that we pass it so that we can start to get some of those answers.
Well, I think most of us on council would vote to approve the project without the cutout for first reading, quite frankly. I think there's support to do that, but I'm concerned with this issue of DOT not approving not approving the 350 feet. I don't know what impact that has on this project. I mean, it sounds like it's
if they don't get approval where it's drawn, that won't provide any access to Whiskey Road to the northern parcel, this imaginary development that they mm-hmm. are required to draw. So that would have no access on Stratford or Whiskey. That would make it a development with no access to roads.
Well, I can't imagine them building a project that they couldn't have access to.
Yep. Let me ask the developers. Let's ask them. Do you have any knowledge of what we're talking about as far as DOT is concerned? Have you talked to them about the access to Whiskey Road?
I think our planning department needs to step up.
Well, maybe. I'm sorry. Would you come back up if you don't mind?
Again, Dan Rickabaum, Moore & Associates. The developer had done a study of the feasibility of this project. Okay, so yes, getting back on this, but I believe that was part of the study that was done. That we made this. They chose this site for those kind of reasons of the access on the Whiskey Road and the location. We have not got into working design because we're waiting to make sure that this concept plan is going to be approved before we spend time on detailed engineering. So at that point, we would then submit a plan to DOT or talk about them about the distance required for the driveway spacing.
Is that the normal way that you do a business? Okay. So that means that we would have to approve it, and then you would go to DOT with the plans?
Or table it for further information.
It seems like an awful lot of work only to find out that you might not be able to do what you want to do.
That's the way it works.
Well, if that...
The way it works.
If I could, yeah.
No, I mean,
I know.
If I could comment...
It's time we understand the way it works. That's the way it works.
If I could comment for... We did look at the length of the turning lane that's turning into Stratford Drive. The entrance, as where they're proposing, is just beyond that point. If for some reason, when they go ahead and ask for a highway permit, and DOT for some reason said, no, you get to move it 100 feet further to the south, they could always come back to council or come back to the planning department and make that change. The reason they have it at this particular location, it centers on the two buildings that would be proposed there at that particular time. But again, they could always come back to council and ask for a modification if that's the test.
That's the whole idea of a concept plan is, you know, we've how many changes have we made to Woodside?
I mean,
you make the best guess of what you think your project, your land is going to look like, but
if at some point in the future, whether it's second reading or when the developer ever comes back with a plan for the northern parcel, and these same nice folks get up and say they don't want access on the Stratford Drive, we're going to be faced with the same situation all over again. As a matter of, is it reasonable to have it for a road that was engineered, designed for it? I mean, the reason there's three lanes there, there's one going in, the two lanes coming out allow for eastbound cars to come out of Springstone Villas and this parcel. I mean, that's why, I don't know, maybe the property owner can tell us who paid for this part of the traffic signal, the side that faces Stratford Hall. I imagine he did, and he did it because the intent was that this was going to serve all of Woodside and it was going to serve these commercial parcels on the left and right. I mean, if you want to just kick it down the road, you can, but it seems to me that you're going to have to face it sooner or later. Why not just go ahead and deal with it?
Well, as I said, the concern I have is I don't know what else is going in on that property. I don't think the developer, the owner, knows what's going in. This is the first project. Just the same thing across the street in hotels. So, we don't know the hotels are going in. We don't know what else is going in.
So if it was a high-volume development, you'd rather a high-volume be pouring right out on Whiskey Road where cars travel 60 miles an hour than you would on a Stratford Drive where it was engineered for that.
If they're going 60 miles an hour, I'm sure public safety wants to speak with them.
Well, they do. Yeah. I mean, even if they go 55, they do. I mean, they do. Yeah.
So we should. What are you saying? We should.
What I'm saying is there was an intersection designed for it. There was a road designed for it, and it makes it safe. Those 50 mile an hour, 60 mile an hour cars have to stop for the light for people to come out of Stratford Drive. That's what it's there for. We can overlook that, but that's what it was there for.
Is there a way to create a frontage road where it goes down and step it up the traffic light at the next possible intersection so they can make a left turn?
I don't know. I know DOT is really tough on traffic lights.
I've said my piece. If the developer or property owner wants to say anything more, then be my guest. But you know, y'all know where I stand on it.
Now, what is the next move, Mr. City Attorney? We make another motion?
That's council's desire.
Huh?
If that's council's desire.
Mr. Mayor, based on our actions that we took with the hotel, and unfortunately the conversation that Mr. Mary just brought up wasn't presented.
That's incorrect. I was there. Go look at the record. Go listen.
No, at the hotel time.
That's what I'm talking about. Go listen.
It was brought up at the end of the second reading.
It was brought up in planning commission and in city council meetings.
It never came. It was not in the minutes of the council.
Go read it.
That's an unfortunate situation because it makes a very difficult decision for us tonight.
It was in the traffic study the city required.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve the concept plan without item 7.
Second.
Do we have a second? We do. Okay. Any discussion?
Steve. Item 7 also deals with having a full range of access onto Whiskey Road from our development. So if his council's wish to not provide the access onto Stratford Road, we would ask that the second half of item number seven, allowing us left in and left out, and in essence, full turning movement on Whiskey Road stay.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct.
Without the ingress egress onto Stratford.
Yeah. I thought that was included when y'all talked at the Planning Commission. It was full in, full out.
It was, but that's just what, in essence,
that's technically part of item seven.
You got to read number seven. That's it's part of it.
It's just for clarification to ensure
that there'd be a driveway connection.
Excuse me. I just need to make my motion half of the sentence then.
Yes, exactly.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Mokia retract his second.
I'll retract it.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve the concept plan with just the first part of item seven that says that there be no driveway connection to Stratford Drive, but the driveway on Whiskey frontage allow all turning movements.
Did that be okay?
Okay. Yes. Second. Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, all in favor? Okay. Opposed? Okay. Passes 6-1. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
And thank you all for your comments and for being with us.
Tell them, who owns this property?
Gerald Waters.
But I thought he wasn't here.
His agent was. His agent was.
Yeah, Dean was here.
Okay. Item two under new business. It's the first reading of an ordinance to rezone property at 940 Richland Avenue East from light industrial to general business. Mr. Leduc, please.
I'll read it by title only. It's an ordinance to rezone certain property consisting of 0.27 acres of land located 940 Richland Avenue Northeast from light industrial LI to general business GB. When a comprehensive plan was made a number of years ago for this part of the community, they recommended that all the industrial property change the zoning at some point in time. They were looking more at a professional type zoning, so the GB is a little different, but there are several GBs that are on the road right now. The Planning Commission, at their review, they passed unanimously that this be approved. And so for your consideration, this is first reading of an ordinance to rezone 0.27 acres at 940 Richland Avenue East from light industrial to general business.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
I so move.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, discussion? Show of hands. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item three is approval of a memorandum of agreement with the SCDOT doing emergency events. Mr. Leduc, please.
You have attached a memorandum agreement with the Highway Department. This would allow the City of Aiken during an emergency event in the future to automatically be working with the Highway Department on whatever action needs to be taken. They are asking all communities within the state to start considering this. We are one of the first ones they have asked, although I have worked with a couple other towns that have already signed this agreement. So for City Council consideration, this is approval and agreement with SCDOT for any future emergency events.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second for approval?
So move.
Second.
Okay, discussion?
I have two comments. Is this the same agreement we were asked to approve before?
This was my understanding on the agenda back in February or March, and then it was removed from the agenda. Right, but it's the same exact agreement.
And we submitted it to DOT with recommended changes. So we're withdrawing that. And if we approve this, this is the agreement they're going to ask everybody to.
That is correct.
Okay. It may or may not be germane, and if it isn't, tell me. But I was disappointed to find that in the midst of an emergency, we were holding people here to help us representing the state to a requirement to have a business license while we were trying to recover from significant damage to our community.
is it appropriate at some point for us to consider during when we're in an emergency to waive the requirement for a business license for contractors approved by DOT to work within the city limits?
The only contractor that had a working relationship there was just, I think it was called, was it Cox?
Cox, J.B. Cox was one.
That was the only one that had a working agreement with the state. Now, there were several other subcontractors that did.
Well, SDR did the county work, but they...
But this agreement that we're asking council to approve would have nothing to do with that in the future.
I understand. I started by saying this may not be germane.
That's not just
myself and out. But I would like to make sure that if we had another ice storm, that we're not going to hold people up because we don't have a business license during the midst of an emergency.
I would hope so, but on the other hand, when they're competing or working side by side with someone here locally who has a business license, it would be hard to say we're going to require our local folks to have one, but someone coming from the outside would not have one. So that's the consideration you'd have to give.
It just seems odd that we charge ourselves business license tax. I just think that's what happened.
You know, for what it's worth, they're going to pay state income tax on the income that they earn if they're from out of state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they don't get a... it's a matter of legal fairness. If you waive the imposition of a business license on somebody...
I do it on all of them.
Right. And so that becomes a problem.
Okay, well, you all explain to people that we can't cut their trees and clear their roads because they got to go downtown to get a business
license. Not that they can get a business license pretty quick. I think it takes them very long.
I got a question, Roger. Is it going to make it easier for us to collect money from the state by having this agreement after we put in all the overtime and effort for like a similar type cleanup?
I have not seen it any faster or any slower in the other communities that I'm working with by signing this agreement or not signing the agreement. We have dedicated an awful lot of staff time and effort to get our processing done with FEMA here in the city of Aiken. Two of the other communities that I'm working with FEMA, one's gotten paid already, the other one should get paid this week. So I'm signing the agreement. The only thing that signing the agreement is it allows the highway department and us to be working in concert to take care of the problems during the emergency.
Mm-hmm.
It sets the foundation for us to have a cooperative arrangement to work together, which I believe is what council would like to see.
Absolutely.
Okay. We've got a motion and a second. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, under petitions and requests, approval to unfreeze employee positions.
We have a number of positions that we would like council to consider. Someone asked me, why do we have so many? Number one, there was a number of positions when I came to the city back in mid-June that were not filled. Those positions, I told staff because of concerns we had with the budget that we were not going to fill them at the time. So this is really going back probably to sometime in April or May. Many of these positions that were open, some of them they had actually even interviewed for and taken applications. But again, as of mid-June, I asked staff to not fill any positions till council was able to sit down, approve a budget, and that we could then discuss it further. So you do have a number of them before you tonight. And what I've seen in working with other jurisdictions with this process, you won't have as many next month, but you'll have some more next month. You'll probably have some more in October and November. Every month, this will be the same situation until you decide as a policy to unfreeze all positions and let the city manager and staff then fill those. We could take these all at one time. We could take them individual. That'll be up to council decision tonight.
I would do them all at one time.
Why don't I read through them, and if there's some that you would like to hold up on, and we could talk, and maybe, in other words, you might want to say, we'll approve them all except for this one, and this one, and then we could just debate those. But let me just go through them all. Public safety has three vacancies. These are public safety officers. we are asking that we fill one of the three until, again, we could sit down and talk about the budget and how do we want to move forward. The one position that we're asking to be filled, we had a person who went through part of their training already. For various reasons, they became a driver operator, and they're ready to go back and fulfill the role, which is basically they have to go ahead and do the training through the operations now that they've already come out of the academy, but they're not fully trained, but that person has already been hired, that person's been vetted through the process, and they're ready to move back, and so we'd like to fill one of the three. The fire...
I don't want to cut you off, but I really had problems with one of the three with this, and I wondered why the chief just wanted one. You never know what's going to happen next month, and so why not do all three? I know we said wait until the budget discussion, and I said you just don't know, and if you're operating your public safety to the bare bones of capacity, what does it do for us in terms of our him, in terms of what he needs to fully function in protecting our city?
To fill the other two positions, it's probably going to be, unless we go ahead and find individuals that are already trained and working for another agency, several months. In other words, you're not going to be able to fill these positions and get someone in here qualified. It probably is about a year to year and a half process. I mean, if you want to start that process to get moving forward, unless we, I don't know how many months it's been since we last filled the public safety positions, they might have some applications, but again, we have to go through the whole entire hiring process. That again, that's up to council. I just felt that waiting another 30 to 60 days was not going to slow us up that much.
And I would tend to agree. I've been a very critical public safety man for a long, long time. But I think using the budget process to evaluate how many we really need. We have 91 sworn officers in the city of Aiken. North Augusta, which may or may not be relative, has 56. So, you know, do we need 91? Do we need 81? The budget process is a place to take a look at that. So I'm okay with what you want to do on that.
But again, though, there are three vacancies. If you would like us to go ahead and start, again, we have one person that could fill it immediately. Mm-hmm. The other two, it's going to be several months before we could even recommend saying, here's the persons that we want to fill it.
And the only concern that I have is that when we start asking public safety questions about how many do we have in various areas protecting these areas, and if we have more turnover, they're recognizing that we're holding off, that we agreed to hold off until the budget process begins. So that's the only thing I'm concerned about here. And let's move on.
The next was the fire apparatus operator. We have several vacancies here. We'd like to go ahead and fill two of those slots. Otherwise, we're going to start accruing overtime for that position.
Let me back up. The sheet that came on the public safety officer on the back, mm-hmm. is this just an old sheet? I hope. I mean, the hourly wage, didn't that increase with our... I don't think anybody from public safety has got it, but the hourly wage is $18.55.
That'd be $18.55 by 2,080 hours. That'd be about $37,000,
$38,000. Is that...
He's saying that's correct.
That's the new amount.
Okay, and then when we go to the apparatus driver, that's down to $966. And I looked at the sheets, Mr. City Manager, that you gave us, and there's nobody making that little. $966 would be the lowest paid person in that category.
I guess Charles, you better come up here.
Yeah.
I know that the other one adds up to, when you take 2,080 hours, that's $38,584, so I'm sure that's correct.
on public safety.
Yeah, that may be at the very entry level.
Yes, sir. The driver operators, they work about 600 more hours than the 2080, and that's why they're out. Their annual salary, it's around 27, 28.
Okay, so the sheets that I saw, okay. Now, if you're not fully manned, nobody gets time off, nobody gets sick?
It makes it much more difficult, yes, sir.
And how often is the fire sergeant going to be pulling a shift as opposed to supervising?
Well, he's always supervising, but he does have to pick up additional duties at times, yes, sir. But when we have a call in for sick or somebody away at training or when that situation arises.
Well, if we give you what you ask, you're going to be, what, down one?
If we're able to fill these two positions, that'll put us back to where we have been with the 18 driver operators.
And that's how many you need?
Yes, sir. We actually have some other positions that are still frozen, but we're just asking to fill these two right now.
Okay, I'm confused on the number of drivers. We have five stations. Are there two per station?
No, sir.
One per station?
Well, there's two at headquarters, and sometimes there's two at station two, but everyone else is one.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
That's three. Okay, that would be 21. No, they're only on two shifts. They're three shifts, so that would be 21. Five, seven times three is 21. That would be fully manned.
Right. Well, that's the optimal manning system,
yes,
but
yes.
We have been working with filling in some other positions, yes, sir. But if we can fill these two positions, that'll get it back to where we were since we're able to transfer this one driver operator.
I'm all in favor of filling these positions. I'm just concerned to make sure that we have enough positions filled.
If you fill the one vacancy, and then if the current driver operators move to a PSO, that's two vacancies. If you fill those two, we'll be back to what we've had for the last several years. They had two more positions in the current budget they were requesting, which gives them more flexibility with their sergeants and in other areas.
Mm-hmm.
So the two that were requested as additional positions in this year's budget, those two would still be frozen until we could talk about the budget.
Okay.
But am I making sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Chief, the 966, that would make that apparatus officer under 20,000 a year?
Yes, sir.
What?
No, ma'am. They work 2808 is the number of hours they work a year. So they work a lot more than the 2080. And that's why their salary is, it shows lower, but they're working so many more hours. They make, I don't have a calculator on me, so I can.
2,800 hours?
Maybe 2. 28.
They're making about $27,000 a year. It's all because they're working a 24-hour shift.
Okay.
Versus a 12-hour shift or 8-hour shift like some of these other positions.
Okay.
So they're not the typical 2,080 hours a year.
That's correct.
Charles, I have a question. I'm sure Roger, y'all have talked about what your needs are. Do you have everything you need to keep a city safe as possible?
Yeah. We believe if we're able to fill these positions that are requested, and we are easily adequated to fulfill those roles, yes, sir.
Yeah. And I'd like to just make one more comment. I've looked at the records for the last several months and noticed the good that's coming about in each one of them. All the crime levels are low, and they keep lower when you look at what it was the year before. Am I correct in that? Am I looking at it right?
Yes, sir. The most recent numbers that we have shows the crime is...
There may be one or two that are slightly different. But when you look at those eight, I think it's about eight or so. And I check it every month. And I'm proud of public safety for what they're doing. And it's really, really showing.
A bunch of good people to work with, yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Can that also be contributed to safe communities?
We believe that has a significant impact, yes, ma'am.
Don't leave yet, Chief. I got a question on three.
Go ahead and ask the question number three then. Communication operator.
So Ms. Schechter knows I do read the Aiken Standard. There was a kind of a scary scenario in the paper. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It was true, false, or whatever. I don't really care what the history is. But if, in fact, it was a false report, the public should be disabused of the impression that everybody screwed up along the line. If, in fact, everybody screwed up along the line, maybe somebody ought to, you know, say something explaining how the emergency notification system works, how 911 works, and what do you have to do to make sure that it's taken seriously or not seriously, or whatever. An article might be worthwhile.
Which episode are we talking about? The one on the interstate or the one at the mountain?
On the interstate. The interstate letter to the editor.
Yeah.
Charles, why don't you just go ahead since you and I discussed that.
We looked into this. I talked with the sheriff last week. This incident never came to our dispatch center. It was taken care of at the sheriff's office level. We reviewed our tapes again this morning, and we never received a call from that gentleman.
Never gonna. Okay. Good enough.
Thank y'all for clearing up the rumor about the mountain lion.
Yes.
That just spread so rapidly on Facebook.
You have a page in your procedure manual for mountain lion capture?
Do you have any? Does council have any other questions on the communication operator or maintenance mechanic?
Are they the maintenance mechanics per shift, or just all at headquarters?
Well, they have it at the sign shop. That's where they're located out of. But
okay.
They're not assigned to a station.
I don't have any more questions on public safety.
Okay, then we'll go to public service. There's a vehicle operator and a maintenance mechanic. Several positions are open. Again, we're not. We do need to fill the vehicle operator. The maintenance workers, we feel if we could fill at least one of those positions, and if we go ahead and move a person up, that'd be two positions. Until, again, we could talk about the budget, we'd be okay.
Okay.
In the engineering utilities, the GIS CAD person, who's Kathy Alexander, has been with us for over 30 years, is retiring, and we need to replace that position. And, again, they have several maintenance workers that positions that are open. There's four and a half, and we'd like to fill three of those maintenance workers. We're starting to see an uptick or rise in the number of leaks that are starting to occur. Again, we're just looking at the numbers. They are going
The only question I have on that is I hope we're not short on the leak teams. Is that what this is saying, that we're supposed to have, what, three leak teams constantly?
George, you better answer that one. I don't know how many leak teams you have.
Well, we hired three last year, didn't we?
Yeah, because I've been getting several emails about leaks in my neighborhood.
Right,
and
we have several vacancies,
yeah,
and that's contributing towards it.
Yeah, and I think I was told up to 50 leaks.
Yes, these three people will be assigned to leak repair, and we are short
four and a half.
Right. From the leak team?
Yes.
It's a half a part-time, George?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And George had asked for several new positions in this current year's budget. He's been on vacation. I've been tied up doing some other things for the city. So we haven't really had a chance to go through that process of looking at all the positions. There's six, seven, eight positions that he had asked for in this current year's budget, and so we'll be bringing some of those back to you at the next meeting.
Now, you're only asking for three of the four positions?
Yes, because three is an even crew, so we thought we would start with the one more crew, and then we would address.
And how many crews will I give you?
Five. Five with water and sewer. Kind of depends, you know, we switch water and sewer depending on where we have the back orders. They kind of work as a team, so I put the two of them together, and it's really five.
Okay, and how many leaks do we have now?
We have in the 40s, and we normally want to get obviously below 25 at any given time, and we were actually at 50 last week, And I mandated overtime so that we could catch them up.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next area is park, recreation, tourism. The main clerk of the tourism has taken on another position, and so we'd like to fill that slot. Primarily, their duties would be at the Railroad Depot during the time that it's open, Tuesday through Saturday.
Who did you say took another position?
Her name was Nicole. Right. Was taken another position.
Okay. In the city or?
No, outside the city.
Roger, can I ask you a question? Lisa Hall is out at the Thoroughbred Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Does she have help?
Does she have help?
Help.
In what way?
Another employee to assist her. Does she have anybody helping her at all?
At the Hall of Fame?
Responsibilities.
When she needs help, we give her help. But no one is assigned to her full time.
We had some concerns expressed by the community before you returned regarding her workload and how heavy it was getting.
Very
perhaps too heavy, and she needed the help, and it was supposed to be in work, and I guess that's probably what Kay was asking about.
Other responsibilities than just the Hall of Fame, didn't she?
Yeah.
She has Hopeland's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So
right.
Basically most all the activities are out. In other words, any receptions, showing of the buildings, etc.
Weekends?
No, she doesn't work weekends.
Okay. Who does then when there's a function at Rye Patch? Or
Jeff, you want to answer that? Who works weekends when there's receptions?
We've got part-time staff. We send out a volunteer list. People can volunteer to work with us.
Okay. Now, Lisa does not work weekends, though.
I think that's where the issue was, is not, trying to be positive, is not having access or ability to use these extra people when there was two or three weekend events. And that's what the letters that we got were saying. And I think hopefully that problem has been relieved, so that if she needs somebody for a Friday night, Saturday night, and so forth, she can call in some help to do that. That's where the concern came before.
And I think her help was housed at another location.
I guess I need to talk to Lisa or to Kim.
Yes.
Or maybe Jeff knows more about the issue. It has not risen to the top.
Well, there has been enough rising to the top.
There has been a few things.
I can assure you that.
But you all have brought forward, and I appreciate it. Keep me busy.
We see emails each month from Rye Patch that Lisa sends out asking for help on the weekends, and staff then signs up for that. We do charge the renters for that, and that's how we reimburse our staff through that. So she does not have to work every weekend, is my understanding as well. So, based on those emails.
I think the concern was more than for the weekends. I think it was for some of the duties that she had on a daily basis.
Now, I do understand that she may be retiring soon.
I think there was discussion of that in the letter. Staff has asked that she try the senior tax worker program, and I think she's using those folks right now to assist her. So
I'll sit down with Lisa and talk to her. How do you do that?
Thank you. Thank
I've known Lisa for a long time, so yeah. I'll do that.
Thank you.
And I think the last issue is the two investigators.
Well, the last one, I do have one other one. It's not included. Last Friday, we found out that Kim Abney's, it's not officially her assistant, but she acts as her assistant. It's our, what we call an accountant three, Cammy Hayes. She is leaving to take on the director position in North Augusta, the finance director position.
Will we vote against that? Good for her.
No.
Good for her.
Actually, I told her we're going to miss her, but I mean, how good for her, because she lives there. Her husband works for North Augusta.
We
hate to see her go, but kudos to her that for being able to have that. So we would like to add that, because again, by the time we advertise and get moving on this, it's going to be another 30 to 60 days, and and she works with the audit and all these other things that are very critical this time, so I'd like to add that to that position. Okay. So those are the positions. Again, if you have an objection to any one of these, we'd like to have your approval tonight on filling the positions as we stated in the memo and discussed.
Need a motion?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
So moved.
Second. Hey, you're taking my job away, guys.
Too quick.
We have first. Who made a second?
I seconded.
The box end here.
Okay. Any more discussion? Show of hands. The pass is unanimous.
Something.
You have to be quick.
Kind of following through with this, we do have, and we've had two openings since sometime probably earlier this year in the investigation department. We've been using some other officers to help as needed with that staff, but we would like to go ahead and go through promoting two individuals to be investigators so that they could be assigned there on a permanent basis.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Discussion? Show of hands? All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 3 then, employment at the tennis center.
Okay, this is somewhat of an unusual situation. Hopefully most of you have known what we've been doing at the tennis center. We've been doing this for over 15 years with Mark Kelvert, has been the tennis supervisor over there, has done an excellent job in really bringing our program to a status within the state that is an example to many others. Mark has been a salaried employee and a 1099 employee. A 1099 is when he's been giving tennis lessons, and it's been a split. He keeps some of it, and then we take some of it. And that we do this with all of our instructors. There's a split between what they receive and what we receive. Well, IRS said you cannot be an employee and a 1099 when you're doing basically the same duties. And so last spring, or earlier this spring, sometime March, April, May, sometime in that time frame, this came up. They kind of got put on the wayside, and so I had the opportunity to go ahead and get this resolved with staff, and Alicia and Kim Coleman and Jeff have done a tremendous job in coming up with something that would work for Mark and work for the city. One of his duties, though, as the tennis supervisor over the whole tennis center, the pro shop, everything that was involved, we up until this time had it where he hired the employees that work out of the tennis pro shop, and he actually paid them. That was part of the duties. Now that he's going to be a supervisor and there's no 1099, it's going to be up to us to go ahead and hire those three individuals. Over the weekend, I tried to lay this out to you in a couple of memos. Hopefully you could understand what I tried to lay out to you. And so we're here tonight asking that council allow us to replace the individuals that Mark had on staff with three facility assistants who would then fill in the time when he is doing the lessons and then on the nights and weekends at that facility. And the revenue and the expenditures between the two are going to be basically the same. His salary is not going to change. And the money that we'll be making through the funds coming to us for the tennis lessons instead of basically to him and the pro shop should offset the facility assistance. We may find out 3 to 6 months from now, we'll come back to you, and there might have to be some different changes to his contract. But as of last Thursday, when he left our office, everybody was feeling good about it, including Mark.
Very good.
So you extrapolated the numbers, and basically it's going to be unaffected.
Yeah, in fact, it looks at this point in time, if everything works out the way we think it will, and based on his numbers at the pro shop and based on his tennis lessons and when he's performing those lessons and possibly bringing another tennis instructor to even give lessons on the weekends, we think we might come out a few $1,000s more than what we are making currently, including hiring those facility assistants.
Wouldn't it have been easier just for them to set up a separate company, and then you could pay them on a 1099 as a contract? He could be an employee and work and have a secondary company for the same company.
He wanted to stay a city employee.
No, well, you can do both.
He's got to help you.
According to IRS, he could not do both.
But he didn't have a separate company. You haven't said that word yet. Is he doing it just as a person, or do you have an official company with a tax number?
I do not know.
What I'm saying is, if you had a separate company.
Yeah, but he would still be the principal of the company, and you're saying, in one breath, you're saying this guy's an employee of the city, and then in the second breath, you're saying, no, you're an independent contractor.
Well, it's not him, it's the LLC.
I don't disagree with you, but that's not the way the IRS is looking at it.
Economic wash, and he's happy, and it works.
Yeah, I'm just curious. It just seems so.
It did not come up, and if we find out this does not work for some reason, that 3 months from now or 6 months from now, that one of us is getting hurt in the process, then we could go ahead and investigate that and look at it.
It was just a curiosity question.
For what it's worth, we did get Ray Massey in my office involved. And I know nothing about taxes. Ray is the expert in our firm, and he worked with Alicia on this very closely, and he couldn't come up with a good idea that would...
We would think that the city could operate like the federal government, but I guess not, because I can tell you there's a world of people down the road, 19, that have separate companies, and they work for the government.
The IRS may be changing the rules because of the health care.
IRS is the government.
I'm just curiosity.
Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
I so move.
Second.
Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 4, approval to fund the maintenance public safety firing range bullet trap.
This is a budget adjustment that we'd like to make. I think council sometime earlier this year, or maybe it was even last year, said that any expenditure over $10,000 need to come back to council. At one time it was $25,000. So, and I'm not too sure if this has to or not, but I wanted you to be fully aware of it. This was the number one item that the Public Safety Department felt was needed within their department to continue the operation in a safe manner, and that's at the firing range. The bullet trap needs maintenance. For whatever reason, it did not get in the budget. It was in the capital budget, but not in the main budget. They will need upwards of $20,000 to do the maintenance on this. This is something that's going to actually be needed about every 5 years from now, and so we would like to go ahead and have council's approval for us to move forward to add $20,000 to this year's budget to replace the firing range bullet trap using funds that are currently in the building holding account.
Okay.
Do we have a motion? Can I move to suspend the rules and have a discussion?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Second.
Okay. Would you like to have Charles up here?
Probably.
Might as well start coming up here. You can bring them all with you if you want.
My question is, first of all, with relation to the change that we made. We made a change in the procurement process, and we copied exactly the process that North Augusta has. So if it's an amount higher than $10,000, it has to be out to bid. And that was the change that we made. This item, I'm a little confused. I know that we have to remove the lead from the firing range. There's no question. This proposal was dated in 2013. It expires in June of 2014. It has not gone out to bid.
Now, we're not asking for you to approve a bid. We're just asking you to approve putting it back in the budget. There's no money in the budget for doing any of this work.
Oh, okay, so if we put the money in the budget...
Then we'll go through the bid process.
Okay. And it's my understanding that there's value in the lead that we'll be taking out?
Potentially, yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's what I didn't understand. So I thought you were asking to spend it. You're just asking to authorize the spending of it.
Correct.
Okay. Well, you're up to.
And then let me make sure I understand. It's obviously going to be over $10,000. Once it's in the budget, as long as we go through our bid procedures, does it come back to council again, anything that's over $10,000, or we just have to...
You just have to bid it.
Just have to bid it. Don't have to come back to council.
Okay, that's what I thought. I just wanted to make
make sure. So all we're asking tonight is that we're not asking to approve any bids because there's still some questions between Charles and myself as to getting bids and getting more than one bid to do the work.
Yeah, well, we do need more than one bid, and, mm-hmm. and I guess we now have a firing range inside, not inside the city, but barely outside the city, so you can use that. So I'll now move approval of your request.
Yeah, up to $20,000.
Okay. Well, the request is for $20,000, yeah.
Right.
Okay. So I move we approve adding $20,000 to the budget.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Yes.
Second.
Okay. Discussion? Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimous.
A bit.
Okay. Number five. Manager report on pre-hazard mitigation applications.
A few months ago, George went to some classes and applied for several different pre-application grants based on some FEMA funding within the city. Most all of those were approved. Those are on the second page of your agenda item. Two of them involved the railroad cut and storm drainage issues. One was at the Wilcox, one's at Chesterfield Street. There are 14 pump arounds at different lift stations. So in other words, if the power went out, there would be the equipment there to allow us to pump around these lift stations to keep them in operation. There were 6 generators within this. They said that we could go ahead and move to the next step. Now, again, this doesn't mean that we're going to get approval on one of these or all of these. It just allows us to go ahead and make the full application for possible 75-25 split. Before we did that, because it was going to take probably every one of these applications, that's 22 different items here, approximately 4 or more hours on George's part for the application process. Wanted to make sure that, number one, council felt comfortable, and for you to be aware of that if we got all of these, we could be needing to come up with 25% city funds. Some of these items, the railroad cuts, the very first item, is something that we, in my opinion, absolutely need to do. The other ones are somewhere between a wish and a desire list. They're not absolutely. If they were absolutely necessary, we would have done them before, if I'm making sense. Would that be great to have? Yes, they would be great to have. Probably the two more important ones on the list would be the very bottom ones, the generator at Smith Hazel and H.O. Weeks. Right now, because we don't have a generator, if there's an emergency and we want to use that as a shelter, we can't because we don't have power. So again, trying to have that as a shelter is not available if we're out of power. But the other ones are desirable, but they're not absolutes.
But the other ones, the lift stations, am I not correct? We have to send somebody out. Because we don't have a generator, we have to send somebody out every day to inspect them?
That's a requirement, I believe, if I recall correctly, no matter what, that we have to, on major areas, look at least once a day. Some of the areas we might look at every 3 or 4 days. Again, it depends how much flow is going through it, and we just need to... We have a lot of redundancy. We have telephones out there, and so if something breaks down, we should know about it almost immediately. But we still go out there anyways.
So we would have to do that even if we had a generator?
And now we're starting to get above my pay level here, George.
Where are you looking?
The pump arounds really will fulfill two functions. One will be in the event of emergency, we have electricity out, you know, over wide areas. You have multiple locations that will no longer have the power to continue to pump your sanitary waste. And we have a limited number of generators, portable generators, that we can move from station to station. So during the winter storm, what we had to do was take the ones we have, move them around, and it's kind of like keeping the plate spinning in the air. You're trying to, you know, pump out a clear well, before the next one fills up. We ended up being able to locate five, I believe it was, from Charleston, and a generator from Atlanta, and we added all those into the system so that the larger volume stations could be maintained. A pump around also will serve the purpose that during regular operations, if you had a failure of a station, just a pump or the electric, the motor went bad, you know, something caused, as Roger is referring to, the telephone. We do have on the big ones the cell signal that will notify our operators. It will actually kick on after that has occurred so that you avoid having any overflow of sanitary sewer on the ground because it is, you know, filled up beyond the reserve capacity for pumping. You have a high and low level. You put the pump around just a little bit above the normal electric lift station actuation for, you know, kicking on. If that failed to go for whatever reason, then the generator system would kick on in the reserve. So it has a redundancy of purpose. What I did on the prioritization of the pump arounds was identify the first two projects were actual situations where we had DHEC reportable quantities during the winter PAX storm, where we had to, you know, tell DHEC we couldn't keep running it well on the ground. You know, here's what we did to clean it up, etc. And then the next two were the next highest volumes that I thought, based on the classes that I took with FEMA, that I thought we had a chance of justifying. So the pump arounds are assurance that we will, you know, comply with DHEC's regulatory requirements for sanitary sewer.
The question I had, George, is a daily inspection. Does the presence of the generator affect the daily inspection at these stations?
It would make it less restrictive. It you could back off on the amount of inspection that you because you do have redundancy. You would still be going through a, you know, routine inspection of the systems, but you would have a redundancy that you do not have now, and so you would have more that you could kind of go to a skip, you know, not a daily, but, you know, every other day or once a week or something of that nature.
And what we're being asked here is to approve the application process?
Yes, just to let you realize that there will be a financial, matching that we have to have. It's a 75-25 split, so the government, federal government, will pay for 75%. We'll be paying for 25%. And so, if you were not going to support that financially, and this would be in future budgets, it can be done over the next, 2.5 to 3 years is the time frame, so we can actually schedule that in. February would be when FEMA would award funds, and then from that period on, you have basically 3 years to complete the project. So it would be over the next two fiscal years that you could budget for these projects to be put in.
Would this fall under the penny sales tax, infrastructure repair, the cameras and the sewer lines and what have you? Does that fall in that same category? Because there's money in there, right?
There is infrastructure repair for the capital sales tax. That's item number 9 on capital sales tax 3. If you consider, this would be retrofitting some existing, you know, systems and improving them. I think you could probably make a case for it.
Did you get us think it would be a stretch case because we kind of put to repair and replace at least stuff that was 40 or 50 years old. And some of this would fall into that category, but are you replacing anything or are you adding to? And that's where the discussion would come in.
Could you get a sense of how likely we are to get approval of this or any percentage of it?
I called the South Carolina Emergency Management Department, and they've informed me that they're thinking that there's going to be about $28 to $32 million available for these programs. At the present time, it's probably double subscribed with projects, so it is a competition around the state. They think that because of various, I guess, just their expectation is it'll probably be 50 to 75% oversubscribed when people realize how much work there is involved in, you know, developing these applications. Plus, you have to have a benefits cost analysis ratio of for every dollar spent, there's a dollar saved, and then there, you know, there are prescribed calculations that have to be done per FEMA. And that's kind of the next class, is to understand what's allowed for the benefits. So until I do that, I'm not really able to predict precisely where, you know, we would get all our benefits. I have a feeling that I had broke my pump arounds into A, B, C, and D. I think D is maybe marginal. I think C probably could be approved. I think A and B are more likely to be approved. The generators for Smith Hazel and Odell Weeks, I think I had heard that they actually hadn't been pre-approved yet by SMED.
That's correct.
So there, and I think the issue that they have with one of those is that if you have a generator for a gathering place, and you know part of it is, you know, the hurricane and the, you know, the disasters, that sort of thing, you have to make sure then the facility is also able to withstand the hurricane. So they're not going to put money in for a generator if your facility isn't rated for a hurricane. And that is a question I don't know that I know the answer to at this point. So that's an example of the process and the details that you have to go through for every project.
Who determines that, George, in terms of the facility? Whether the facility will withstand, is that someone that would come down from the state to?
I think we would have to certify it. FEMA will accept a PE's certification, okay. So we would have to hire a consultant and define that.
So based on Roger's statement, the railroad cut of Chesterfield at the Wilcox and the generators for Smith Hazel and H.L. Bell Weeks, which totals close to $1 million, which would require about $255,000 from us. Do we get those funds back if we don't, if we're not in the...
You would it's a reimbursement program, so you spend the money and then they reimburse you for the 75% of what you spent.
But if we're not selected for the funds...
We don't get any of it. Yes.
But we're not paying anything to apply for these projects.
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
Just George's time.
That's right.
Okay, all right.
Which, of course, is...
Which, you know, is a reasonably priced commodity.
It's priceless.
Which the 4 days is worth about $255,000.
I really believe in all these projects.
Right.
I really do. I would advocate... you know, going through the process and trying to develop them to support, you know, gaining the federal funds. 75 cents on the dollar is pretty good, you know, opportunity.
Sure is.
But you still have to come up with the other 25%.
What are you going to do if none of them get approved?
Right.
it will have the same problems we had, during the other storms, and we'll have more DHEC reports if DHEC ever becomes really tough on these types of issues. You know, they'll slap our hands or give citations. I mean, it's up to them to kind of decide what they're going to do.
Let me ask that maybe a different way. The railroad cut. Mm-hmm. Something's going to have to be done there.
Right.
Yeah. There's no doubt something's got to be done. These other areas, we have lived for decades without them. Mm-hmm. And so it'd be, again, very nice to have these things, but obviously we've lived for a long time. The railroad cuts, something has to be done there.
It's a strategy to go for more, and then hopefully as they go through the process.
If it was just us competing against just us, that'd be one thing, but we're competing against probably 50 other jurisdictions in the state. And to me, I'm bringing this to your attention because I don't believe you had this list before.
Right.
And I wanted you to have this list because so often I've heard from you all that this was a surprise. And so if George applies for these things and we come back later this year or early next year and say, oh, hey, by the way, we need $500,000 for our share, you're not surprised about this. And again, we could approve all these on the list, or we could just approve some of these on the list. This application is not due till the end of October. So if you want to just take this under advisement right now and we come back to it in September and approve it, or if you want to approve a couple of these now, we could take it any way you want to. But again, it's for your information. We're ready to move forward. George has to take a class. It's multiple days.
It looks like it's going to be the end of September now, so our timing is going to be tight between that and putting the
right
application.
But again, until he takes the class, he really can't do much on these applications.
Should you come back to us following the class, you think?
No. We really can't. No. If he takes the class at the end of September, then all of a sudden it's going to be the second week in October. He doesn't have the time.
Okay.
I had enough introduction to this BCA to know that I needed more information, mm-hmm. but also to kind of start sorting through some of the projects. And I didn't add projects that I didn't think we had even a shot at applying. And like I said, the C and D pump arounds are not as strong as A and B's are.
Mm-hmm.
I think the generators for the water are very strong. I think the Wilcox is also very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And then I explain what the shelter, the issue is associated with that.
And again, that one has not been pre-approved, the shelters yet. It's not just for Aiken. I'm working with some other communities. They have not been approving the other ones either. They're still studying them statewide.
Right.
So that'll get back to us. What I'd like to ask council, if you want to only approve, again, you can approve it all if you want to, but at least approve the first line, which is the rail cuts, and if we go ahead and get the information on the generators for Smith Hazel and H.O. Weeks, I prefer you look at all the lists and approve it one way or the other, but if you want to study it, think about it.
What are the C and D ones?
If you look at the items here, and if you said the first pump round was A, the second one was B, third one C, D.
Yes,
you didn't
that's
list them
exactly
AD.
The order A, B, C, and D is listed here.
Let me ask you a question. The D ones are Cape Cox, Cape Fox, Colony Parkway. That's a
correct.
D?
Yes.
Shall we D?
I'm sorry. That's C.
C.
The Belle Reve, yes.
And Kemper Downs?
That'd be the B.
B?
B, and then the A priority is the wire road.
Okay.
Road. We have six emergency background stations. You know, you look at Woodside, Gem Lakes, we do have these systems in place
already.
For the high volume flows. And what you'll see is these are getting lower and lower flow in size of community served, area served.
Why is there a generator at the municipal building? We already have an emergency center, and the employees are not going to work anyway in an ice storm, so what would be the purpose of the generator there?
This one was to... this building has the email, the financial service,
it's over
that
there
sort
now.
Of thing.
When you say that, but if the people aren't working, does it really matter?
Well, it's to support normal operations. If in the event that you had a longer and a larger disaster, you would be looking for these, not just the shorter term. This was a request for this project to be included, and that was included on the list. So
okay, so this is your priority from top to bottom of the page.
it's not necessarily my top priority.
Okay.
The only thing I could say about the municipal building is it does hold all the servers are here, all the IT equipment's here. So if something went down here, then we'd lose all of the information that's stored at this building.
That's not...
George, let me ask a question.
Well, we got to back up there. You could lose that anyway, Roger, with the lightning strike on the...
I'm just saying that you would. The system's not going to continue operating during that time.
But it would still hold the back.
Oh, it's going to hold all the information. You're not going to lose it like forever. Okay. It's just for that 24, 48 hours, whatever, you would not have access to it if you needed it.
This building is this building. It's not City Hall.
That's
correct.
I mean,
not admin building.
I got one question. On this seminar that you're taking, seems like it's real close, and then you're going to be like a one-on paper hanger or something trying to get the requests in. One, can you get a delay in the submission date? Second, is there somebody that's like a consultant that can help you starting tomorrow, for instance, on writing up the requirements?
I did talk to the South Carolina Emergency Management people. There is a kind of a FEMA independent study that I plan to take, and just, learning a software program through a software program isn't always the easiest thing to do. The advantage of taking the class, so to speak, is it's conducted by FEMA, and the previous ones that I went to, they were very helpful in actually kind of talking about your projects and helping you fill them out. So my goal was to have all my information so that when I sat down with them, this BCA is like the one thing. It's a must-have, or they won't. Mm-hmm. It won't happen. And that's the intricacies. Is what are you allowed to put in? And the that's the subtlety of whether you'll get it approved or not. That. So from that perspective, I think it's just kind of charting your own course or maybe getting a little extra help.
And to answer your question, we'll provide some assistance for George and help him to fill out some of this paperwork so he's not just doing it all himself.
Right. Some of my staff has already started gathering some of the information. Nika, with our GIS, there's a lot of just statistical numbers that you need to have, how many people are being served. We need to go out and get with the SCE&G, how many outages have we had, maybe just on normal issues and lightning, storms, and that sort of thing. There's just data gathering to answer the right questions.
The ice storm. I'm sorry.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
The ice storm. Did we have folks at Odell Weeks and Smith Hazel, I thought?
I don't think we had anybody sheltered there.
That's Smith Hazel we did.
Sure.
Yeah, because it was working at the time. But if the outage, if we didn't have any power there, we wouldn't be able to have people there.
Okay.
George, from what you and Roger may know, is there any advantage to going ahead quickly and saying you want any number of these and so getting on the list, so to speak? Or I don't know if there's any advantage of going ahead. And then, at a certain time, when they either go over the list and say, you can have these, you can't have these, at least you've got it in already.
I think there's advantage to kind of a top priority and a lower priority. The railroad cut for the Wilcox, I think, is
but,
a high.
But my point is, I know that's number one, mm-hmm. but what I'm talking about, suppose you entered all of these.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I want all these. We need all of these. Could you then come back later, or they'll come back and say what you're going to get, I guess.
Yes, they will.
Okay. But is there any advantage of doing that rather than waiting another month or two or whatever? Or I guess I'm confused on just when do you have to do this?
The deadlines are we need to submit the full FEMA application by the end of October.
October
27th. And that's to South Carolina Emergency Management. They gather all of the states together and submit them all or the ones they consider the priorities and do kind of sorting through to FEMA by November 27th or something about there. Then February, about the annual, the 12-month anniversary of the storm, that's when the federal government is supposed to lock in the actual funds for the emergency. And then that's when the calculation is we have $30.5 million or we have $28.2 million.
Sure.
In this,
sure.
And that's when FEMA then starts looking at the priority that South Carolina Emergency Management Department has placed all of the projects in. And FEMA will start giving out the money based on South Carolina's priority.
So it doesn't seem like there's any advantage of you can't, you have a certain date that everybody's putting these in.
Yes.
So nobody's going to get in there first and therefore get an advantage.
No, I don't think so. It'll be, the key is to get it in for October so that they, sure. Although, you know, there's probably some benefit to having something already on their desk a month ahead, just so South Carolina's emergency management group is familiar with it, and maybe there's some benefit, I don't know.
Okay.
There are 8 items on this list, mm-hmm. and my suggestion is that we look at the top 4 as the A, the first tier list, and the other 4 as the second tier.
I think I'd go along with what Leslie is saying. I think if we go back, and my history goes back with the Wilcox and Jeffrey Ellis, to, I guess it was end of 2009 or early 2010, we had the windstorm. A number of trees were blown down, which took part of their, right up to the property, even some of their property. And then there was also, I'm going to say, a low-key analysis of the other buildings that are adjacent to the railroad track. And none of them were even close to the issues with the Wilcox. And I think the other thing we need to look at when we look at that particular one in the railroad track, if George gets a DHEC violation during the ice storm, it's probably not going to make CNN and USA Today. But if the Wilcox happens to get closed and half of something falls in or the railroad is closed, you get a lot of attention on those type of items. So I think that's what Leslie is saying. Those top 4 would be the key ones that would give us the most financial advantage. And also probably you don't have to answer the question, gee, you knew it was going to fall in, it fell in, and you did nothing. And so I think there's the railroad is key to our existence here still. So I'm supporting what Leslie is saying.
Okay. When the time comes, that is. What do you expect tonight? Anything?
I'd like you to say you give us approval to move forward with the applications on all or a partial amount on this list.
Leslie, maybe you ought to make the motion for the, like you said, the top 4 would be your A list and the bottom 4.
Second tier would be the B list.
What is the second tier?
Well, we would determine, we can determine tonight or send to you our suggestions on what we believe.
Well, we'll just say them all.
I'm saying we'll have them all there, but he would know who we plan, what we're looking at in terms of funding as priorities, and we've already stated it's very clear, we're agreeing the railroad cut is the top priority. And the other 3 would fall in line as the first tier to be considered.
How about if we do this? If you could approve tonight us moving forward with the application process,
yeah.
George will then be able to start filling out the forms, getting information he needs. Once he takes the class and he comes back in October, we could say, based on the cost-benefit analysis and based on some other factors he may learn, this is what we would suggest as being the top ones, this is the other ones. Yeah. Would that be fair?
Yes, that would be very helpful because you may find out after the analysis is done that some
I'll second Leslie's motion that you made for.
And they drop out themselves.
Okay.
Yes.
I second Leslie's motion that the city manager made for you.
Okay, is there any more discussion on this issue? Show of hands, please, all in favor.
Thank you all.
Chemist. Okay.
It's like pulling teeth, Roger.
This is so much fun.
Yeah, but there's a lot of hidden cost in this in the future, so
that's what it's
about. While Jeff is here, Jeff, I noticed, and I know, Betty, we've addressed your concerns about hanging trees with Roger, Ms. Myers in the audience. I noticed when I came by the Wilcox, it seemed to be a lot of debris still in the center that still exists.
As mentioned when we first came over in 2010. Oh, you mean in the
currently, right? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, still there. Yeah.
That needs to be cleaned up. It doesn't look good at all. Where the folks are parking.
In the parkway.
In the parkway, yeah. The park looks.
Tom wrapped a little bit. And I know that they said that they were going to get to it, but it's.
It's.
Okay.
I've had several.
Duly noted.
Okay.
I see Tim there writing this down.
And Betty Myers, Ms. Myers, has some concern that Rod is aware of as well.
Okay, item 6, annual reconciliation of the city budget for fiscal year 2013-14.
This is primarily for your information. This is what the auditors will be receiving as far as the end of the year. Again, typically, when we looked at the average for the last 10 years, we have had $505,000 more revenue than expenditures. Again, on the average, this year we had a negative of $112,453. Again, a large portion of that is because we have not received all of our FEMA money, which we spent in 2014, but won't arrive till a few more weeks from now. So it'll be actually accounted for in next year's budget. Now, there were some other reasons which we have put in the memo here as to why we have that deficit. Utility fund, it was basically a break even. The good news is that the first 2 months of this fiscal year, we have had over $800,000 in billing for utilities. Now, what does that mean? That's over 10% higher than we've had in the past previous few years. You understand what I'm saying? So our utility billing for July and August for water and sewer is higher than what we had even anticipated for this time of the year. And so with the rate increase that you had this last spring, with the fact that we've had a little drier than normal summer, we seem to be trending in the right direction for utilities. Where this past year, we were trending in the wrong direction because it was a very wet summer, which is why there was basically no funds available at the end of the fiscal year to put back into depreciation, and stormwater, again, was almost a wash. So this is for your information. We're happy to answer or try to answer any questions you may have concerning this.
I think the key is just don't forget we had the raise, which was a controversial raise.
Like the 10%.
Yeah. And the gallons pumped is what gets to be important. And I just watch those as it goes through each month and so forth. And but let's you mentioned it, but we can't oversight that we are getting 8% more money in both of the areas.
The other thing for council to understand, you have authorized the replacement of the not only the radio device on the water meters, but the water meters themselves.
That's correct.
Water meters are like your vehicle. They're like us. They just all tend to slow down as they get older. I'm sorry. Don't take that personal, anybody. But they tend to slow down. So they're going to be replaced, and we are replacing about 100 a week right now, the water meters, or about 5,000 a year. So in a couple more years, they'll be totally replaced. So we had 5,000 that were fairly new that we started with. We've already replaced close to 3,000, so you're going to start seeing more revenue coming in just because we got new water meters that had slowed down, and we're probably measuring only about 80% of the water going through it. So that's the other factor that you'll be seeing in the near future. So again, this is just as information, and we're happy to answer any questions that you may have.
So what you're saying, a year from now, we can give the residents some credit.
Did I hear that? You'll have to talk to the next city manager about that.
Okay, the next item is construction projects.
Again, this is information. Last meeting, I believe we had 7 listed. Of those 7, I did make some changes. I've added another 4. As I'm learning about these projects, eventually you'll probably have a sheet here that'll have 25 to 30 projects listed. That will be updated on a regular basis, so council can look at it, be able to answer any questions, and it's something that I would recommend that the new city manager would be able to keep up to date for you for information.
Gentlemen, I have a question. Did we make all the deadlines on safe routes to school? There were some.
The plans, again, were submitted to the state. The state reviewed them. They had a number of questions. To my knowledge, George, last time we talked to Rick Toole, he's made those revisions and going to get back to the state for another review.
The last, we have 3 more letters of permission for constructing sidewalks on private property or in the right of way, and when those 3 are completed, we should be ready to submit back to South Carolina.
Okay. Thank you for the extra work to get that done on time.
Does Safe Routes only apply to Crossville Park, or does it apply to other neighborhoods in the city?
We only have received a grant from SCDOT for the Crossville Park area. We could apply for other grants for other areas in the future. Okay. But right now, the state, and this is not official, but until we take care of the projects that we have on hand, they're not very open to giving more funds for other projects.
And will this install sidewalks in the entire complex?
No. It'll take some sidewalks all the way from York Street to the schools and along part of the perimeter, but not. It doesn't cover every street.
Okay, all right.
Maybe about 20% of the streets will have sidewalks.
Super. Thank you. And it ties into the area of little shelters we put in 2 places. It goes right to the school. I forgot what was the proper name for them.
And one of the things that has been brought up, there was money in this year's budget for a playground to be located on school property. And again, if anybody has further information about that, we don't have even any formal agreement right now with the school district for them to allow us to put that on it, but it's in the budget. It's $50,000.
North Aiken Elementary?
Yes. So before that money gets spent, we'll be talking more about it.
It has to come back to council because that's a property transfer, property action. Okay.
Well, we'll be having to get an easement from them to put that property or put the playground equipment on it.
But that would at least require a resolution to do that, because we would have some issues with liability and so forth and so on. Okay. Thank you.
Committees, budget.
Okay. The last item I have here is before I even hit the committees, I just wanted to reconfirm, and I'll go ahead and give this to you all in writing, but I will be out of town. I'll still be reviewing, I'm sure, my emails as I'm out of town, but I'll be out of town from Wednesday the 27th of August through Monday September the 8th, which means that our next council meeting, which is on the 8th, I assume council wants to continue it, so Stuart will go ahead and be in charge of that council meeting.
Good show.
Now, as far as we have had a lot of different committees, and I really appreciate council diving into that and really getting a lot of things resolved, I believe it's worked well. At least it's worked well for me. And I believe it's worked well for staff. And I would like to suggest that we consider possibly having a few other committees. And if council feels like there's other things that you feel like this would work well, that would be great. But the committees that I'd like to consider would be the development of the alley. You had a presentation at your first June meeting. I've met with SCNG. I've met with the Downtown Association. I believe there's a funding stream that we could look at. We would need to look, though, at what is the design, and then also for this committee to look at the funding stream before we can go ahead and make the next step. So, again, I'd like to sit down with the council committee to work through the details so that we could then bring something back to council maybe in September or October as far as where, what we want to do on the alley. So that would be one committee. The second committee, and we may not even need a committee on this, it's fairly straightforward. Currently, credit cards can be accepted on site, but you cannot pay by credit card over the phone or over the internet. So if I'm a customer that realizes that my bill is due and it's the 20th and it's 5:05 in the evening and I'm pounding on the doors trying to save my 10% late fee, I could go home and pay for this over the internet, or I could do it by phone. Also, the company that we're working with will do a robocall. In other words, all those customers that will have a late fee that did not, bought on the 19th, they'd be calling up the probably close to 1,000 folks saying, hey, if you don't pay by the next day, you're going to have a 10% late fee. And at that point, they could then go ahead and enter in the information and pay right on the phone, or they could go ahead and do it on the internet.
Aiken Electric Co-op does that.
Without having to come into this town, and it shocked me how many people are waiting in line on the 19th and 20th to pay their bill. That wouldn't have to do that. Now, the charge is $2.25 for the fee. They will also do the same thing just before you're actually cut off and then have to pay a $25 fee for disk reconnection. They'll call ahead of time and say, hey, you're going to be cut off if you don't go ahead and pay. And we have about 300 people every month that we actually physically cut off. And so, and some of these are repeat customers, but some of them are people probably in this room that just forget. And so we'd like to go forward that credit card. We could have a committee to look at it, or if you want, we could just go ahead and start implementing it.
I'd say go ahead and get it done. It's so different than your telephone bill or any way.
If you don't mind, I will send you a memo detailing this all to you. If you have any questions, fine. If not, we'll turn that back to finance, and they'll go forward with it.
Do you need a resolution or anything for that, or it's just a matter of business?
I've got a question on the credit card payments and so forth. How necessary is that? What is it, 2.25 fee for using your credit card?
It's 2.25, or we're going to have to go ahead and pay this company probably about $30,000 or more to set up the system to make all these phone calls. They're willing to waive any costs to integrate our software system and to set up all the calling devices by getting $2.25 per customer. We feel there's going to be enough customers that it'll more than pay for itself and make them money.
And if folks don't like the $2.25, they can show up and pay it in person.
Yes, that's correct. They would still get the call,
right.
But they could come down and pay it the next day.
If you have your card with you, you're talking about charging for the telephonically.
When they come down to our office, there is no fee. Correct.
You use a credit card.
There's still a fee on the credit card.
No, I think.
Can you stand? Come up here, Kim, please.
If you pay with a credit card at the teller window, you still get charged 2.25. I guess that's.
Well, yeah, you get a fee if you use a credit card anytime.
Right now, we take credit cards in our office, and if you're paying your water bill, the powers that be, the regulators, whoever they are, for Visa, won't allow us to charge a convenience fee for utilities. If you pay your taxes, your business license, you want to rent the conference center downstairs, we do charge a 3% fee in our office. But we do not have the ability right now, without a large outlay of money, to take credit cards online or on the phone. So that's what this product will allow us to do. And there's a $2.25 charge, which we don't even touch. It goes straight to them. They hold all the credit card information. That way we don't have to worry about the PCI compliance rules. We don't want to be holding anybody's credit card data, anything like that. So they do all that for $2.25 per transaction. So if you want to call every month and pay your water bill on the phone, it'll cost you $2.25 every month. You can pay on the website $2.25. But we hear it every week. I mean, probably not a day goes by that we don't get an email or a phone call or a nasty letter or why can't I pay online? Or I can't find where to pay online. Or can you take my credit card on the phone? I know I'm late. I don't want to be cut off tomorrow. And we don't have that ability. The other thing that I think is is going to be really customer friendly is when our customers call in, the first thing they'll hear is if you input your account information, your balance is X. Your payment is due on the 20th. Would you like to make a payment now, or would you like to talk to someone? Because most people, that's their first question. How much do I owe, and when do I need to pay it? So they're going to get that without having to wait in a queue, without having to, you know,
they punch just
talk to a customer.
Right.
Yeah. Kim, do we know of a place, another city, rather, that's using this right now?
Yes. Sumter is where I actually first heard of it, and they are using... it's called Summation 360, or TWI is their parent company. And I talked to three different people who've used it for a long time.
Three other cities.
Three other cities, I apologize. One was in Washington.
One was in North Carolina.
They all had very good responses.
What's their cost? Is it about
it's same? Nothing for us, because they're going to get their money on the $2.25 fee.
Yeah.
And the reason we're choosing this company is because it can integrate into our software system, HTE.
Right. They've already done the match, and they've done it successfully in other places. So they know, you know, with minor tweaks and things, that they'll be able to integrate pretty seamlessly, so much so that they're willing to do it with no upfront cost, whereas HTE, our current vendor, to turn on the website application is a $10,000 upfront cost plus a annual maintenance fee.
Aiken Metro Co-op does this now. Local residents get calls from Aiken Co-op when their power bill is about to turn off. When their power is about to get turned off.
What do these other places charge their customers?
It does depend on the size of the government, okay. How many customers you have, but it's $2 to $3.
Okay.
And we had seen some of their older contracts, like there were some in Florida where people actually paid upwards of $50,000-$60,000 to have this interface done. And so they're in business. Now they've developed it, so now they know they can do it and replicate it time and time again, and we get the benefit of what they charge folks for in their earlier times.
Roger, do you need a resolution or anything or not?
If you do a bank draft, do you attach, is there a fee, like if you automatically sign up for it?
No.
No, our bank draft is our cheapest, easiest, most favorite customers to have. And it's paid on the 20th, or on the 10th, not the 20th, which is why a lot of people don't want to do it.
Anything?
I'd like
a couple of times.
It'd be nice if council, again, so it's in the minutes that you are approving us to move forward with this credit card system that was described by Kim tonight.
Yeah, I think that's important because it is a change in policy that affects or could affect everyone. It won't, but it could. And so what
is the name of the company again so we could say that in the resolution?
TWI Summation 360.
Okay, TWI Summation 360 be approved.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Any
thank you.
Discussion? Jim. Okay. Show of hands. Pass unanimously.
Okay. The last committee, since we now have eliminated one.
I can get by easy on this one.
That was a great committee meeting, by the way, on the credit cards.
Yeah.
Is on the Brinkley property. Again, on the Brinkley property, it's a situation that now that we have decided to move everybody out of that building, we need to decide what to do with that building and property. I think the consensus is we need to do something, sell it, lease it. But again, what we do and how we do it is up to interpretation. So again, I was hoping we could have a committee to sit down and start talking about the Brinkley property and bring something back to council, hopefully within the next 30 to 60 days.
Philip.
It would be nice
like
to have the first.
Yes.
Be nice to have the first meeting before August 27th.
I'll meet tomorrow morning.
What happens on the 27th?
Oh, that's right. I'm leaving.
Hey, Roger, you're due back August, September the 8th, okay?
We'll send it an email.
Thank you for reminding me.
So if we're going to have these committees, if what I could do is just
announce, well, first of all, is there anybody that would like to be on one committee or the other?
I'm on the Brinkley. I'll take Brinkley Property.
I'll go on Brinkley Property.
So we got,
I don't want anything to do with it. I have no idea. I'd be lost.
I'd be happy to participate in the alley thing if need be.
I would the alley. I think it's valuable there, and I would suggest it be valuable to have Cam Scott come because he's put the thing together and worked with Avery, and Avery probably needs to be.
We would have Avery, we'd have Cam, we'd have someone from SC&G there.
We need that background to
help. It wouldn't just be council there. There'd be staff and other folks at this meeting.
Okay. And I would like to be on both of those, please.
Okay. Reggie on both. Anybody else on either one?
Me.
Here.
Which one?
Both.
Okay. I'd like to be on both too, Roger.
Okay, got that.
Yeah, both of these are key.
They're so attached, they should be combined.
Anybody can attend, though. Right?
Yeah, anybody can attend, but I'll just, if you're really interested, I'll make sure that we try to meet on a date that you're available. Not to try to ignore anybody else, but to.
If I have to pick, the Brinkley's the more point, more important.
Just send out the email like you've been doing.
I'd like to be on the expanded credit card usage in the future.
We've already decided that.
I already moved that one ahead.
That's the move.
Yeah, we moved that ahead. That's right.
You got it done.
Yeah, good job, Gail.
Very efficient.
Roger, if we're both on.
Find a volunteer. Y'all don't want me on nothing.
Yes,
I want
do.
You on everything.
We're on both committees.
That's
both
Roger.
Possibly.
That's all right.
I want you on everything.
We can certainly talk about them both. Because they're integrated in many ways, the two of them.
Yeah, one and the other.
Is it committee's budget? Are we going to talk budget on this issue?
Okay, we need to start establishing the budget. We talked about the budget back in June. Thank you for reminding me. I was going to ignore that item. Back in June, we talked about budgeting and that the budget you approved in June was an official budget, but it's really somewhat interim until we could sit down and talk about the fact that although there's money in the reserves that you could continue with this process for a couple more years and be okay, you are taking money out of the reserves. And to me, we have always tried to maintain a minimum of 6 months of reserves available. At one time, we had about 9 months. We're down to, if I would look correctly, right around the six-month period now, maybe even a little bit less.
It's just a little less. It's 100.
And with this budget year, we may be even more going down. We need to look at expenditures, see if there's things that we cut. Unfortunately, in talking to you all at one point or another individually, it seems like there's more things we always want to add than to take away. But we need to talk about that, the process. We've already talked a little bit about public safety tonight. And then we need to also talk about the fact that, conversely, what items can we raise for revenue to meet the expenditures that you would like to have. And I have some examples for that I'll be able to sit down with you and talk about revenue increases. I know that one of you are going to be gone until, I believe it's September the 4th,
yes,
more or less. Something to do with twins, not to mention any names.
They've arrived.
I'd like to wait until that person is at least back. But if you have a particular night of the week that you'd like to meet, we could do that. A particular time of the day. I don't know if you all could meet at 4 o'clock or you'd rather wait till 5. That's up to you. And I'm just looking for direction tonight.
Well, it's an ideal situation for a bona fide zero-based budget process, which we didn't do before, but what we did before was very valuable. But because you're right, we're getting to the point in time where we need to balance needs and wants and money and so forth. So that's something we ought to put on the table. Whether the rest of the council supports it or not remains to be seen.
Okay, but we still need to know what day of the week, or does it matter?
Does it matter? Just schedule it.
Okay. What's the earliest? I know, Gail, you work most of the time.
I'm in Clearwater. It's easier for me to get here if you do 4:30 or 5. 4 o'clock is just too soon.
What I like to do is make it as early as possible. We could have some sandwiches so we could really get into it. Sometimes when you start meeting at 7 o'clock,
by 9 o'clock, we're all starting to get a little tired.
Just like the waters.
So, okay, well, I'll start scheduling some dates then and try to have at least two or three times a month where we get together. You know, so hopefully we can finish the process before you hire someone.
Speaking of which.
Yes.
How soon are you going to be ready to put the city manager job announcement on a municipal site, a municipal association website?
I have received comments back from one, two, three of you concerning that position, and that I've given you about a week now, okay. So I haven't heard anything else. I'm going to take those comments, refashion the position, and send that back out to you. We did find out that we cannot put this ad on other association sites other than South Carolina.
Okay.
So I will be giving you a price that we could pay if you'd like to put it on the ICMA, the International City County Managers Association. I think it's like about $500, $600. It's not a whole lot of money if you'd like to go that route. But I should have that to you in the next few days.
Okay.
So you get email out of
that? Oh, I'm on email,
So I'll get something to you, and as soon as I get confirmation, so I'd say probably within the next week, at the very latest, we'll have something on the municipal site.
Okay.
And the way it'll be positioned, it'll be open till filled. That way, once we start getting applications, if you feel like you got 30, 40, 50, and you want to start whittling through these things. Now, a couple of the questions I had from some of you were the process, how we're going to go ahead and do all that. We'll worry about that once we start getting the applications in. Do you decide you have a committee, council meets at a whole, how do you want to go through these applications, and how do you want to do the interviews, and et cetera.
I just want to get it started, though, because, again, I think we need to... I'd love to have a person hired in the October time frame. If you go much beyond that, you're getting into holidays, and I don't think we want to go that far. So.
All right.
How much would it be to go through a search firm?
If we went through a search firm, there would be some expense. There's different ways of doing it. We have not looked into that at this point in time. That was discussed at the committee meeting.
It's about the one that I researched multiple ones, but the one I got a proposal from was about $15,000 plus expenses.
Plus what?
And they come in
expenses.
They'll come in and actually sit down with council as individually and as a group to help discern, you know, what we need and what we're looking for, and then they do a whole lot more. But the committee kind of poo-pooed that, yeah.
I think we talked at the committee meeting of maybe having somebody come in and give us a proposal, if you would. Tell us what they could do for us and what have you.
I can have them do that. I've got a proposal, but I can.
No, I mean, that's
yeah. It'd be better to have them sell it than me. I'm not good at presenting their ideas.
I mean, the last time we didn't go that route. we went to the municipal website. I thought we got some applications. It was probably a rather odd process, since many of us knew the result ahead of time. But I think it worked the last time, and we advertised in what the Georgia paper, the Augusta Journal, and the Columbia paper, and put on the municipal website. And we got about 50 applications.
Oh no, it was 120.
Well, I don't think there'll be any shortage of applications that we receive. If y'all want me to have somebody, like these people that I've talked to, if you want me to have them come make a pitch to us, I can do that. Now, there'll be no shortage of applications whether we advertise.
Well, have you got a written proposal from this?
Yes, I did. Not, I didn't know we were going to discuss it tonight. But yeah,
give it to Sarah and we can get copies and look at it.
Now, do you want to wait then on advertising till we...
No, I think we'll go ahead and advertise.
Yeah, go ahead.
And if we get, at some point in the process you want to bring this person in, you can do that.
Yeah.
Well, is at some point are we going to meet as a council, open session if we will, or executive session and go over some facts of life, or we're just going to go right down the road? Because what Philip is saying, I agree with. Somebody ought to... It's the Myers-Briggs way, if you will, or whatever process you want to use. But I think that would be valuable in today's world to interview us and then that same person try to help make a match. It's still our decision to make, but I think a little outside influence might not be all bad.
No, I certainly agree with what you're saying.
So if Philip can get that out to us and
yeah, I've got it.
We can make that as a comment back to you. I've already commented mine back to you in relation to that.
And again, we could go ahead and have them come in the next few weeks or on September the 6th or 7th.
8th.
Or 8th or 9th.
Right.
So, again, I like to... I think we're all in agreement, though, we'll start the process.
Yeah,
I agree with that. And then we can always have that firm come in here and help us through the process.
Yeah,
and we may can talk to them about a cafeteria version where we only ask for the analysis part and not the other. I mean, I don't know if they'll do that or not.
We can always ask.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think we can talk amongst ourselves as to what we expect in the process. And I guess everything's public until we start talking about names and specific applications, and then it's executive session and until what, the final three, and then you have to release the final three.
That's correct.
Somebody on the other side of the room wants to know what we're
doing. I'll ask for it to be on the agenda. I think especially if we're going to send it out, go ahead and send it out officially for resumes, then we ought to have it on the agenda for the next meeting to discuss for sure, our process. I think that will help our applicants also to know if they know how we're going to select them.
Well, I would suggest that instead of being on the agenda, we just schedule a meeting of council to, you know, a separate meeting to talk
session.
About the process.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
A room 204 meeting.
And we'll just go into room 204 here. I mean, it'll be open to the public, we could discuss the process at that time.
I'm okay with that. But I think it's time to do that. Once you go out, a lot of people are going to know, well, how are you going to do it?
Right.
Okay. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, you ought to have the requirements and the process finalized by the time you go out. Otherwise, you can't go out, get responses, and then go out again, can you?
You know,
you don't need to know if you're applying for a position, I don't know that you have to state the process in terms of how the selection is going to be done.
Yeah, every job I've ever interviewed for,
We don't do that.
Yeah. We need to know.
Somebody told me how it's going to get picked.
No, we will know. We will know, but in terms of trying to explain to the applicants how we're going to get down to the...
Well, no. What I'm saying is if we get responses and then go out with a new requirement, if we find nobody's qualified, or, you know, do we go out with a different requirement? What do we do with the people that are reapplying?
Well, no, if you don't hire one of those first three.
Yeah, given the broad range that we're going to advertise, if we're going for a national search, you'll find somebody in the local, state, and national search that will fit the bill.
How much is the ICMA?
Oh, we keep the one we got.
I want to say it's, if I recall, it's going to be plus or minus $500. Part of it depends. I believe we're members of it. Do you know if we're members of ICMA? Yeah. So if we're members, then we get a discount. So it's going to be around $500. And that'll be a national advertisement then in their newsletter and in their magazine. It'll go on their website immediately, then it's in their newsletter, which comes out on a regular basis, and their magazine.
Do we have to do mask as well then, or?
Well, the Municipal Association doesn't cost us anything because we are members of there.
Okay.
Roger, you brushed over my comment in terms of my saying, we'll keep the one we got.
I think it's time to adjourn, mate.
not until you say yes.
Roger, I do have a comment regarding questions that I'm still getting with the parks. Perry Park and Eustace Park, the bathroom, so I'd like to discuss that at some point in time with the bathroom.
Let me just make a quick comment on bathroom facilities. These are more regional parks. When the Senior Youth Center is in operation at
right, our plan is at Eustis Park, there'll be bathrooms there at that senior youth center. As far as Perry Park, if we ever want to have bathrooms there, we're going to have to enter into a contractual agreement because that is school district property, and they've given us use for playing fields, but not for permanent structures. So if we want to have something at Perry Park, we're probably talking around $60,000 to install a bathroom at Perry Park.
And I think I asked you about Crossing Park Playground. Someone called me about that one.
Yeah, and that's that. Again, we're starting to get into now neighborhood parks and neighborhood parks.
Yeah.
It's really not the place for a bathroom.
I still worry about safety.
There can be problems.
I worry about safety. You know, kids going into the bathrooms and
you put a building
the
up,
wrong
you got
kind
a
of person going in behind them. And
so we've been very reluctant to having them.
Yep. Right.
You know, and I would stop at regional parks, and Perry at least kind of fits in that.
Given the crowd that they have and the activities that they have.
But again, if council wants to go through that, it's not budgeted. We would have to get permission from the school district. I'm sure they would give it to us, but it's a process we'd have to go through.
Right.
But
okay.
Eustis, that'll be taken care of when the senior youth center gets established.
Okay.
Stand there.
Quick note, Robin Williams committed suicide today. Robin Williams.
I thought they just said they found him unconscious, but he
dead.
I know
dead.
But
suicide.
But I didn't
hear
suicide.
That's what the news says.
Oh,